please announce yourself.
Gloria.
Connie's on too.
I know we'll have a lot of people today. The TIF proposal that I put on. You know,
the TIF proposal?
Just to look at expanding how we might be able to use TIF.
Okay.
So, yeah. So I think, I'm pretty sure there's some interested people on that.
I'm recording, so.
Oh. No,
okay. I'm just going off my computer. And you see that John from Census is going to call at 10:30.
John from who? The Census.
The
oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's calling in at 10:30.
Bluetooth headset, could you please turn it off, because we're getting, whenever you call in, whoever it is, we are getting this big clicking noise. Do you hear me? There's somebody on the phone using a Bluetooth headset, possibly?
Take that as a yes. Morris,
yeah.
Did you get the bid?
I didn't.
Sorry for being late with an oversight. I was out of the road driving when I got your email and I got in. So
okay,
Saturday.
We're getting a clicking noise. We had the last two calls. If you think you might, and I think the person who dialed in about three calls ago, the clicking started. So if you dialed in the last minute, would you be willing to hang up?
Hi, Linda. It's busy evolving. I can see the title, okay?
Okay. Thank you, Tim.
I thought it was Todd.
Todd
was the one that started.
Todd Lundle, are you on?
I'm on, yeah.
Do you have a Bluetooth headset on? Could you try calling in from another phone? Because I think it's when you came on and this clicking started that we had the last two calls. You can still use my office if you don't mind. Or if not, I...
Well, actually, why don't you have them hang up and see if he says it and then try to call in.
Wait 30 seconds and call back in and then we'll know.
It might not be.
Maybe it's not.
Maybe it's not.
Okay, everybody, I am going to
Hey.
Linda Murphy, and getting ready to start the meeting. We are so happy the interference that we have when one person, somebody calls in on these meetings. So I am going to have to mute everybody. If you need to, if you want to talk, you're going to have to unmute yourself by the star six. Okay, so and I apologize, we can't have you unmuted all the time, but we're getting too much interference on our conference call line in New York. So I'm going to right now mute all of the lines, and if you're called on to talk or if you have something to say, use star 6 to unmute. Okay? Thank you. Yes?
Yeah, they said that I was supposed to introduce myself if I come on to the conference call. This is Lindsay Beecher, Superintendent of Gilbert.
Lindsay, good morning. Thank you.
Linda?
Yes?
This is Dave Beecher. I'm also just joining.
Thank you, Dave. Okay, and it's okay if everybody does introduce themselves, because I think we've probably got about 20 people on. That's the conference call. Recording is just please introduce yourself. It's not something we put on as a feature. So, but thank you for everybody who did, but I'm not going to go through for everybody for introductions because that takes too much time for people to talk over themselves. So what I'm going to do is start the meeting. I'm going to mute everybody. And again, star 6 if you need to unmute, but if everybody unmutes, we're going to have this problem again with the noise. So you're all going on mute.
All participants are muted, and they can unmute themselves.
You might want to remind Mr. Cook when he calls in, or at 10:30, is to either unmute him or tell him how to unmute.
At 10:30. Yeah. Okay. It is now 10:04. Sorry it's taken us so long to start this call. Technical difficulties. This is May 5th, 2020. Story County Board of Supervisors. We are meeting. Originating from the administration building in Nevada, and we are providing public access today through conference calling, and that's because of the COVID-19 virus and not being able to have more than 10 people for guidance in a gathering. I have muted all participants at this time, and I'll repeat this several times. You need to unmute yourself because you need to present on something or we for a public forum and you want to talk. You can unmute with star 6. You can also text us during this meeting at 515-451-7293. Supervisor Lord agreed to take text. And in particular, if you have an item that you want to speak on, I'll introduce the agenda item and give just a couple minutes for you to just text to 515-451-7293. And don't text what you want to say. Just text your name and the agenda, briefly, the agenda item that you want to speak on. Okay, so then I'm calling the meeting to order after all of that, and we'll ask if anybody wants to join us in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. I've already stated by the meetings and talked to you on practical to hold with in-person public access. We're going to item 5. I will entertain a motion for adoption of the agenda.
So moved. Second.
Hedden?
Aye.
Wilson?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Agenda's adopted. Next, we'll go to updates on COVID-19. Are there any staff who have any updates they would like to give now? If so, remember you need to unmute yourself if you're on the phone.
Which is star 6.
Star 6. Thank you. Hearing none, I'll ask supervisors, do you have any updates?
I don't know any particular time, no.
Okay, then we're done with that. We'll go on to public comment. This comment period is for the public to address topics on today's agenda. We'll allow public comment now. If you would rather, I know there's a couple things that people are on the phone for, and they may be under additional items. If you would rather wait and just talk at that time, and which agenda item is that? It looks like other reports.
18,
I think. Yes, item 18. If there's anybody who would like to speak now for public comment, I'll wait about 30 seconds or so for text to come in.
can they only do that by text, or can they unmute themselves?
You can also unmute yourself, but what I'm concerned about is if we have a lot of people wanting to talk, everybody will try to talk at once. That's why I've asked for a text. But
yeah.
If there's somebody right now who has maybe a comment on something other than item 18, or if you need to speak now, Jeff, or someplace else, we can try unmuting, and if that's star 6, and if there's too many people, we'll go to the text option. So public comment is now open. Hearing nobody, I'll close public comment. Oh, yes?
Yeah, this is Linda Beecher again. I just wanted to, I have another Zoom that I'm going to have to take part in. Just wanted to, if I could, make a public comment on item number 18 under other reports. I know that you're going to have a discussion, I believe, on the possibility of urban renewal areas and the tax increment financing portion out of the TIF. Just a quick comment, I'll try to keep it very, very brief. Whenever something comes about with a TIF, that definitely has an impact on the school district. I'm not saying that I'm for urban renewal. I am for the different types of housing, but I also want you to realize that that's something that when you look at a TIF and how that's placed, I try to look at the information to see if there is a what this will entail, and there will be a vote today on that. My question would be, and not necessarily a question, but my comment would be that we're looking at school districts. That will definitely have an impact on ours. We would receive the taxation for our debt service, but not for our general fund. And this time, with the uncertainty about what's happening with the economy, it makes us a little concerned. And we want to make sure that we're communicating as much as possible where this might go.
Okay. Thank you, Lindsay. Anybody else have any comments? We need to leave the call shortly regarding that or on any other issues.
And I have received one person who's asked, who's in line now, when we get to item 18.
Okay.
They don't want to speak right now?
No, it just says at the time of the discussion.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Does anybody else want to speak at the time of the discussion? Do you text the number again, 515-451-7293. Anybody else who would like to speak now, please unmute yourself, star 6. Hearing no other people, I will close public comment number one, and we will move on to discussion consideration of items brought to the board's request for immediate action. We have a proclamation. Give me a second, please. And it's the Iowa Economic Development Week proclamation, and As we kind of share the reading, Supervisor
Hedden,
would you like to start
reading
the
first
couple paragraphs?
Sure. 2020 Economic Development Week Proclamation. Whereas economic developers promote economic well-being and quality of life for their communities by creating, retaining, and expanding jobs that facilitate growth, enhance wealth, and provide a stable tax base. And whereas economic developers attract and retain high-quality jobs, develop vibrant communities, and improve the quality of life in their communities, states, and regions, and
I've got it here.
Okay.
Whereas the creation of new opportunities for businesses and entrepreneurs is a key component to securing Story County's economic future for generations to come, and whereas Story County is committed to fostering a business climate that will attract employers, enable the county to grow and remain competitive on a global scale, and generate new jobs and opportunities for our citizens, and
whereas the Ames Chamber of Commerce and Economic Development Commission, the Nevada Economic Development Council, the Story City Economic Development Corporation, The Huxley Economic Development Corporation and the Story County Economic Development Group are committed to providing quality resources that boost economic growth and enhance quality of life throughout Story County. Therefore, we, the Story County Board of Supervisors, do hereby proclaim May 4th, 2020 through May 9th, 2020 as Economic Development Week in appreciation of all our partners in the economic development field do to make Story County the vibrant and thriving community it is today. So I would entertain a motion for approving the proclamation.
I would so move. Second.
Discussion? Olson?
Aye.
Hedden?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. And more important than ever in these times. So thank you for giving the proclamation to us. Let's see. We have John Cook calling in at 10:30, so remind me to go back to him at 10:30. Now we'll go on to the agency reports. We have MICA reports submitted, and we don't have, I don't think we have anybody on the line. Is anybody on the line from MICA?
Gloria Simmons is, I believe
she's
on.
Gloria's on. Oh, okay, great. Would you, Gloria, would you hit star 6 to unmute yourself? Still on?
Good morning.
Good morning. We have your report, so we can read that, but we just want to give you an opportunity if you had any additional things or anything you really wanted to highlight in your report.
Well, I didn't know the temple.
Can you turn it up a little bit?
Yeah.
Forward. We have not, I'm guessing there's going to be much more personal protective equipment required. We don't know the level of that that will be suggested by or required by the dental board. So not only will that impact how many people we can see because of the required disinfecting, but also the level of equipment will add cost to our services. So, as with many health services, we're in a holding pattern. And our, in addition, the other services that the county supports has also been ceased by directive because we can't provide contact or services. Our other programs are all working remotely, and we have figured this out as we go, as I'm sure many of the agencies have. It's not ideal, but we're so glad we're able to contact with family and services. I've listed the services that the county supports to access, but then I also listed what other services we provide and help that might get to Story County and our required response due to COVID-19. The last and final item on the list is the in-school student program, and the only school that was qualifying this year was Mitchell, and we were not able to serve them. Our child care nurse consulting services, this is very important during this time, as some child care providers have tried to stay open to provide child care, especially for our essential workers. They had a lot of questions about how to proceed to protect staff and children from any infection. So our PCMC nurses have been very busy. And then sure, do you have any questions?
Supervisors, do you have any questions for Gloria?
I have one. Gloria, this is Lisa. So I'm just looking at your allocation that you have left from assets from Story County. Are you going to be able to draw down those funds? And are those, I'm assuming right now it's predominantly going to be more administrative and stuff versus the actual service
at least as of yet, because the dental clinics are not open yet. Is that correct?
Right. Yes, and as you can see in the report, it costs us about $6,000 a month. We can, you know, just to keep the lights on and the phones working and all of that. So our allocation that's left is $8,321.75. And we anticipate within throwing that down. So just so that we can maintain the facility until we're able to provide service. And then I'm still doing administrative work, so that's what that money will provide for.
So if you have $6,000 a month in expenses, and that's not providing the dental care, and you have $8,321.75 or so left in your budget or your asset fund, I guess I'm just wondering, do you have, where are you utilizing, do you have additional dollars then to help you through the rest of the fiscal year, if I'm reading that correctly? And I could be reading this incorrectly, but I just want to make sure.
Well, parts of it right now, as we just received a $20,000 grant from the Delta Dental Foundation to help us stay open. So, and I'm trying to stay close to them. You know, as you know, we serve a high number of participants that they serve,
Right.
The managed care organization for all the DWP patients that we see. And, in keeping the facility open. So that's utilities and the tiny portion of the salary.
Okay, so the $20,000 from Delta Dental will help to keep the doors open, as well as the money that you can draw down from counselors.
Well, and then, you know, you have to consider that we've been closed since March 11th.
Okay.
So, Gloria, this is Laura Solson. Do you all internally already break down your utilities and admin costs by your various units that you serve? In other words, the keeping the dental clinic separate from maybe the food bank, separate from maybe the...
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
Absolutely.
All right.
And I can get that to you. And maybe I will
Sure. Okay, thank you. We suspect, as we've already discussed at the board table a little bit, how we might be asking the admin team to ask for that. That's nothing solid yet confirmed, but we have mentioned that at the board table.
Yeah, we have some recommendations coming back. Anything else,
Gloria?
Or
no. We are there for on the child health voucher side and the fluoride, we are contacting those DWPs, and we've reached out to them not only to talk to them about their oral health and if they have an emergency and what is an emergency and what are your options if you have an emergency, but also to touch base and make sure that they don't. They have all their basic needs met, or can we connect them to services that might help? I try to take every opportunity to reach out to families in all our programs during a very challenging time.
I'm very glad you're doing that, because even if it's a general reach out, I think there's a lot of people out there, connections right now are so scattered that it's probably having somebody call and say, how are you, how are you meeting your needs? Is very helpful, and I appreciate what you're doing at MICA to continue the services that you can safely reach out to
people. The families have appreciated it, and the information is so confusing as it updates daily, if not hourly, and more resources become available. So we try to make that known as much as we can.
Before I thank you.
And I don't know if Joseph Stowell or
not. I hear.
Okay.
So, yeah.
This is how you know that's an answer to this.
Yeah, this is Josie Salen calling from my field and family development side of things. And I don't have anything to add besides what's in my report. We're continuing to offer our food pantry services and then the home visiting programs are doing virtual visits. Food pantry is curbside pickup, or we have done some outreach to start doing delivery. And like I mentioned in the report and what Gloria touched on just now, we are making those calls to family units. They're doing all hand food and they don't need anything. They really would appreciate somebody reaching out to them just to see how they're doing. So that, unless anybody has any questions, that's all I really have to say.
I don't see any questions here. Josie, thank you very much for your staff
and
what you're doing as well.
Yeah, thank you for watching.
Stay safe. We will then move on to consideration of minutes. We have two steps, the April 24th special meeting minutes and the April 28th regular meeting minutes, and we can approve those together if you want to entertain a motion.
So moved. Second.
Okay. Discussion? None?
Mm-hmm. Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Minutes are adopted. Consideration of personnel actions, and I did check with our HR generalist and the new hire that is listed. There may be another one, but I just found out two new hires. They were offered prior to our hiring freeze.
I would so move that we approve as presented. Second.
Olson.
Aye.
Second.
Aye.
Merkin. Aye. Personnel actions presented as approved.
Go ahead and take John on the phone.
John.
I can do that. John Cook, are you on the phone? If so, hit star 6 to unmute yourself and introduce yourself. Yeah, I don't think he's on yet, so go ahead and just comment. We have a consent agenda. Are there any items that anybody wishes to have pulled?
Yes, I'd like to pull item 14.3, acknowledgement, I guess, of the sheriff needing a poll bar. Pardon? For discussion, I'm sorry.
Anything else to pull?
No, I don't have anything else to pull.
Okay, in that case, I would entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda, left item 3, which has been pulled at the request of Supervisor Olson.
So moved. Second.
Discussion? Seven?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Okay. I'm going to ask one more time, and we'll go back to item 3.
Mm-hmm.
Is John Cook on the phone yet? If so, would you hit star 6 to unmute yourself? Okay, let's go on to item 3 then.
Hello, Supervisor. Sorry, my name's John Cook. I'm on the phone.
Okay.
John, okay, we will go back then to agenda item 10, update on 2020 census. John Cook, Senior Partnership Specialist. John, would you take it away?
Yes, ma'am. Sorry for, I do apologize. I had 10:30 on my list.
No, you were. We were looking at another agenda item that was going to take some discussion, so I thought if you were on a few minutes early, we'd go to you. So we'll take the presentation now. Now, you were not late. I was
great.
Late.
Okay. Oh, so you guys are super efficient. So sorry, Paul. So great. So the PDF, I believe, a PowerPoint that I sent, if you could pull that up, if you could just tell me if you can see that or not.
Yeah, it's on the agenda.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, somehow it didn't open for me, but that's okay. So I'll follow along.
I've got it open.
I'll follow along. I can see it in this, yeah, thing.
Okay. We're sharing a social distance.
That's fine. If you don't want to take the risk, that's fine. I can just kind of talk you through it, and you can read through it later. It is very good news in that, even though we're all kind of operating in the COVID-19 environment and adjusting, the Census Bureau is is no different. Despite the challenge of the ongoing environment, we remain committed to our mission, which is to get a complete and accurate count of the entire country in the 2020 timeframe. In addition to that, obviously, we're also balancing safety for the general public and safety for our employees as well. So we've changed our timeline a little bit about how we will be conducting the 2020 census, and I can talk about that here in just a few minutes. If you look at slide three, which is our response rate map, the Census Bureau has been receiving self-responses through the internet, through phone, and through paper mail-in for a little over 6-7 weeks now. The national response rate of as of Sunday was 56.3%. I'm happy to report that Iowa is totally crushing that at 64%, so we're doing a really good job. We are currently in third place, a few percentage points behind Wisconsin and a couple points behind Minnesota. So we're doing a really good job. This is slide four. You can actually break our map down. And this map, I should say, is available on our website, 2020census.gov, and it updates daily so people can see how their county, city, or census tract is doing. Story County is doing quite well as well. It's actually, as of this poll, which I believe was Sunday, 64.3%, so actually a little bit above the Iowa average, and when I looked at it yesterday, it climbed a tenth of a percent, so 64.4. So that means that 64.4% of all the households in Story County have responded to the 2020 census. So that's fantastic. Obviously, the challenge is we want to keep pushing that and keep getting people to self-respond so that we make sure that we get the most accurate count we can. Looking at slide five, I just pulled the actual Story count picture, and that's got the census tract on it. And just kind of an idea of like the color coding scheme, it starts off as a dark orange and then gets lighter, and then switches over to blue at 51% and then gets darker. So you really want to be dark blue. And with the only exemptions or being a couple of small tracts in and around the ISU campus, everything in Story County has changed the shade of blue, so they've crossed the 50% margin. And also those tracts in Ames around ISU are affected by the kids moving and growing home from COVID, and we're working with Susan Buyata and ISU to make sure that those kids get a new grade. So it's just lagging a little bit behind. So slide six, recovery and funding. You know, census data is going to play a huge part in economic recovery from COVID-19. I know that's on the agenda as I was looking at it, but I was coming in that you guys are declaring an economic development week, and I think that's fantastic. Census data is going to be huge when we start looking at relief packages from the federal government and grants for small businesses, and where those go is going to be largely dependent upon census data. So we really want to encourage people to help their community for the next decade, taking a few minutes and filling this out, whether online, over the phone, or if you've got a mailer to return that. It's never been easier to do this. So you can do it, and you're going to set your community up well for the next decade and help us prepare for the next big challenge that, you know, that none of us can see coming over the horizon. This will be slide seven. And like I said, we mentioned that we're changing our timeline a little bit. We were planning on having self-response wrapped up by July 31st, and so that was the original plan. Obviously, with things changing, we have now expanded that to October the 31st. So we will be accepting people's responses to the 2020 census for several months after the original plan. We encourage everybody not to wait for the last minute. Please don't be doing this on Halloween. But do it now so that we can make sure we get an accurate count. We don't have to send somebody to your door. 2020census.gov, anything and everything that you can do to help us get that out, we greatly appreciate it. Jerry Moore has just been doing a jam-up job as the liaison for the Story County Complete Count Committee. So I can't say enough nice things about Jerry, and that's just because he paid me. So we do have slide 8, several phone lines, and those are available for public dissemination. Does anybody want to use a dedicated Spanish line or Vietnamese language that your constituents are more comfortable with? Slide 9 shows the number of languages that we offer some variety of support for. The first 12, the ones in red, are available dedicated phone lines, and then our website can be translated into those. The other, the balance of the 59 languages total, they're listed here. So Thai, for instance. There is a dedicated page on our website that is translated into Thai. There is an embedded video that explains the census to someone in Thai. And then at the bottom, there is what's called a language assistance guide. So they can print out a guide, again, in Thai, that explains to them how to participate in the 2020 census. And that's available in Spanish, Greek, Navajo, Tamil, anything listed there. There is some sort of an assistance on our website. So we highly recommend if anybody's having trouble or if you have specific pockets, community, for whom language is a challenge, just to point them in this direction or send them the link. So this is slide 10, ways to respond. We will eventually be getting our field operations up and running again. They have been suspended, obviously, as we reassess the COVID-19 environment. And we're currently working on mobile questionnaire assistance. Actually talked to Jerry about this last week about some spots in Story County where we might go and set up a table with a census worker and a laptop and take people's responses in case they haven't filled it out. And then right now, non-response follow-up. This is where if we really haven't heard from you after giving you several months of online, you know, opening online phone and paper, we come and knock on your door. And it's currently scheduled to begin August 11th. It will run again to the end of self-response, which is October 31st. If people don't want a census worker knocking on their door, obviously with health concerns reasons, the easiest way to avoid that is to just fill the thing out online, call the phone, or send it back in, and then you're off and you've done your civic duty for 10 years. How you can help, if you're looking for ways, obviously please visit our website and encourage others to do so. Follow, like, and share our materials on social media. If you just look up U.S. Census Bureau on Instagram, Facebook, in LinkedIn, Twitter, or YouTube, I highly recommend our YouTube page. There's a lot of really good explanatory videos and PSAs. Snatch one, throw it up on whatever social media or your county website. It'll get a lot of views and encourage a lot of people to participate. Encourage your family, your friends, anybody you want to participate in the 2020 census. And then host the questionnaire assistance site once we get those up and running, and like I said, I've talked to Jerry. Last slide is 12, which is, you know, we try to break it down and keep it really simple, and we encourage everyone to tell everyone they know the census is easy, the census is safe, and the census is important. So, and ladies, with that, slide 13, you've got my contact information. The joke I always like to make is I'm like the last federal employee that's paid to help people. So if you have any questions or if I can do anything to make your lives easier, just let me know. So with that, do you have any questions?
Supervisor, any questions for John?
This is Supervisor Hedges. I don't have any questions. I just will have a comment to say that you're absolutely correct. The census, to be able to take it, is quite easy, safe, and it is important to do. It took me a little, probably about 5 minutes to complete it. So it was very quick and easy.
Great. That's fantastic. And, you know, one of the things that we're finding is if you want to say that on Facebook, you know, a 15-second, 20-second testimonial video goes a really, really long way and helps us kind of cut through all of the social media clutter that we have. So I would encourage you to just put that up on the county's Facebook page, just, you know, 15, 20 seconds, because it does go a long way. I'm really glad that you filled out and your experience was good. So thank you.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
None.
Okay, John, thank you very much for everything you're doing. We all know you sent the trio got thrown curveball, as we all did, and we appreciate your efforts. So thank you for the time.
We appreciate we appreciate you guys very much. If you need anything, let me know. Please be healthy and safe in the days and weeks ahead.
Thank you. Me too. Okay.
All right. Bye-bye.
That's great.
Yes, I saw that. 408 new cases, 19 deaths 19, today.
19 deaths today.
It's reported today.
Okay. I missed the first one.
408 new cases, 19 deaths.
Thank you.
Okay, we will go back then to the consent agenda and item 3, which was called. Supervisor Olson, the sheriff appeared.
I think one or two of them were just process questions, and I was hoping Ethan Anderson would still be in the room to answer one of them.
He's
coming back.
Okay.
All right. And then I have a question based upon some covenants and so Ethan, gonna ask my first question of you. Would the sheriff like to speak about this first, or?
I think the question you have about the covenants and things of this nature would be appropriate for Ethan to address
okay.
those.
Okay. Super. Okay.
Can you come clear up here?
Sorry, Ethan.
You can.
Ethan, my first question is a question of process. Okay. So since we're not, this is more of building a building, if I understand this correctly, as opposed to like buying a truck or something like that. Is it that we need to acknowledge it as supervisors, or do we actually need to approve it?
Yeah, so if you look at it, under 331.212,
mm-hmm.
there's a list of six or seven distinct items that require the majority of the board approval. And number two is the contract for the erection of a public building. So I think this qualifies as a public building. It can be public for the charity. So, yeah, it's going to be subject to board approval.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so, and then it had been brought to the board's attention on Friday, and I apologize to the sheriff that I didn't send the email until Monday morning. I try to let you know right away if we're going to have questions. Okay, is that we were given some covenants about anything that's built out there related to the research park. So did you have a chance to look into that and see how this fits?
I did briefly, so... I'll just say, for other county departments, in particular conservation, we've looked at and discussions about what the best mechanism is for putting use restrictions on property. And so we discussed, yes, restrictive covenants are a tool. We've also talked about the better tool would be easements or maybe a deed restriction. Because the problem with use restrictions in restrictive covenants that certain provisions of restrictive covenants expire after 21 years. That would be under Iowa Code 614.24. So those will expire after 20 years unless they're extended or renewed by a majority of the landowners in business. So
did you say 20 or 25?
21.
21.
So they were filed by Bill Talbot in 1998. So by my math, they've expired.
Okay. All right.
That is certain provisions of both. There's if a restrictive covenant incorporates an easement, there's a couple other exceptions, and those contain. But the use restrictions cannot unless they're renewed. And there's only one modification approved by a majority of the business park owners, and that was in 2005. And that pertained to concrete medians and separate access to lot 6 and 7 on Fossil Parkway. And then the remaining covenants, everything stays. So those provisions were not extended or renewed. And I guess it would be my my legal opinion, a quick review that those have expired.
Okay. All right. Well, then that removes a large hurdle here of the concern as we're looking at the pole barn and those covenants that are no longer applicable anymore. We're going to require a lot of extra material, brick or glass or whatever. Okay. All right. So so then the third question I have is probably for the sheriff then. Thank you. And I appreciate the sheriff being here in person this morning, and even you two and Nick. I know. Okay. So, Sheriff, my question is, I had to look at this. Is this a temporary building or is this a permanent building? The cost is indicative. It could go either way. If then down the road, the county would go ahead and look at, you know, with our feasibility study and doing something bigger out there. So can you give me your perspective? It's all coming from your budget. So,
sure.
Yeah.
Sure. First of all, I'd like to thank you for reaching out to me and let me know you're pulling this off. I always appreciate when I get a heads up that we're able to look into these questions like the zoning and those type of issues with Ethan and what's been helping. We have this building is intended to be a permanent building. Now, for the last several years, we've tried to find other options where we could put this. The county range is out because that's just so vulnerable out there that you know what to keep an eye on. When we had first got the MRAP, facility management come to us and said we got to move it off the pavement for the parking area because it was settling down into the asphalt. So anyway, we looked at facilities management and helped us what we needed to do for concrete and the weight of that vehicle. We had for a special slab at the extra thing again. So going down like the fairgrounds and things like this, I don't think that would be an option. That's one area. The other area is even if, say, 5 years down the road, the capital improvement plan goes through and they build a big storage area, unless it's right there, we want to keep the MRAP right where it is, where we have electricity to it then. We also have quick access to it. We do our checks on it weekly. It's got to be started weekly. We make sure everything's up and running and make sure there's no issue. There's nothing worse than having an emergency and going out there. Yeah. So just a couple weeks ago, we had a north of us, state terminal call us, going to just be consistent with the MRAP. We had it down in Roy at that time, and they were just putting the air conditioner in, finishing up the part of that cost that we had when we took it to Minneapolis. So they finished that off down there during that time. So we just got it back, and right now it's 100%. But things like this and working with other jurisdictions in the area here is critical. If we have a vehicle like this, I think with the investments that we have and how we have it, I think the county will really want to protect that investment. And having it in, out of the elements, right now with a turret on top and with a hatch slide back and forth on top, it doesn't seal very well. So we have to go out and get a tarp and put it on there. And then after a while, the tarp gets old and it itself starts leaking. But a bigger problem is, like in the wintertime, when it's real slippery out with ice, or even when it's raining, and you have some officers that are trying to put the tarp on, the danger of them slipping and falling and getting burned, especially if you put the tarp on, you can't do it in a high wind. So anyway, we went ahead and looked into the possibility of this building.
Okay. Okay, thank you. Those are my questions. They were just trying to clarify more process. So the only one, other one I would have, and it's back to Ethan, would be about, since we have it on the agenda but we show acknowledgement, can we make a motion today or do we have to wait until Friday or a week from today? Friday's our special meeting, but I assume you want to get started on this with the rains coming?
Well, yeah, and just a little bit of other information. We had one individual that we were getting the bid from first, and he looked at it, and he said, well, we need to have it completed by the end of June. And he said, well, I can't do that. I'm working on two other county buildings right now. So, but he gave us this guy's name, and he did good work. And so we went out and talked to him, and told him what we wanted, and then we worked with him. We got the bid down to $21,000, half of which will come out of the sheriff's forfeiture fund. And then he came down the end of last week and looked at the MRAP and where we were going to do it, and it was at 21.5, and that was a 14 by 14 overhead door. But we thought we could maybe save a little bit of money because it'd be a tight squeeze when we had him figure in a 14 by 12 foot door. And so when he came down and looked at it, he recommended that that's going to be too tight of a fit. You have the mirrors out, everything. If you're going to try to back that in, no mirrors, he said. So we went back to a 14 by 14 foot door, and that will elevate the bid to $21,500. And then, so I also brought for to see. This is an example of the kind of building. It's not going to be that big. This is just what the building will look like, and the colors will be that will match just the center color. So it's that just shows the framework of the building.
Thank you. And I did, I'm from Iowa, but I'm a city girl. And so I did go back online to make sure that we were talking about the same type of building. I looked at Boulevard. Okay, just to make sure we're talking about that. Okay, so as I said, I just need to know, can we make the motion or do we need to put it back on another agenda?
I'm sorry.
Maybe
you have a question.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I think since what's on the agenda today is the memo or the...
Just the memo.
We should probably bring it back Friday with the contract.
Today was the purchase.
Today was the purchase?
Yes.
Acknowledgement of the purchase.
Okay.
Acknowledgement of the sheriff's purchase of the full barn for $21,000. He said it's $21,500.
Yeah.
No, okay. I thought this. Okay.
Okay.
Supervisor, do you have any questions?
No, I guess my only comment was I did talk with the sheriff yesterday as well, and I think one of the other things you said too about having it next to the building was security reasons why. And I did a Google to make sure I understood what a full barn was. It's just not a term that I would call it and stuff.
Right.
So, but I appreciated the conversation and the information that you provided me.
That was one of my formulas I did not have.
Well, I would have just called it like a large shed. So,
yeah,
you know,
and that's why it's a little.
So, yeah.
I have a statement for the record, and it's why we're splitting this, but I have a question about it. It was the April 16th meeting of last year when maintenance was brought to our attention.
Mm-hmm.
Previous to that, 100% of all the expenses about the MRAP, and this was like I think the previous board were all on forfeiture funds.
Mm-hmm.
And you came to a center proposed 6% of the cost for maintenance and fuel to pay forfeited funds, with the other 50% coming from the general fund. And the motion was standard new bills and second is the approval of the taxpayer dollars along with forfeited funds to cover maintenance and fuel costs of the Story County Sheriff's Office MRAP effective immediately.
Mm-hmm.
I understood that was the vehicle going forward kind of thing. Supervisor Olson, I don't know if you remember.
Mm-hmm.
But it talks maintenance and fuel. It does not talk to structures. So I wonder if we are, in fact, if we approve this, do we need to change our going forward of what we're going to pay for the MRAP, or is this one special occasion and we just say it's not precedent, setting precedent?
Yeah, I assume it's just a one-off and that it's for a public building.
Yeah, okay. I just wanted to make sure that we were okay with our previous motion and I think it's appropriate that you brought it to us.
And since it does have something that is a requirement or it is necessary because of the MRAP, based on that 50-50 discussion we had, I thought it would be appropriate for me to offer to pay 50% of that to our forfeited funds, which is permissible.
We have a question texted in on this issue, and this is from Chief, and I'm going to get it wrong, Zignus, I'm sorry, Chief, from the Gilbert Franklin Fire Department. Is this building just for the MRAP, or will it store other assets as well?
The other aspects of the county has. That's under a much larger plan, that's a capital improvement plan, I think that's what it's called. And so that's going under. This is something that we need right now. It's a building that will just fit the MRAP and maybe the tire, the extra tires that we have for it. But it will all be MRAP equipment and it's not.
And are we still storing the Don Foley of building?
Yes, we are still.
That's probably why, yeah.
Well, yeah.
The guy going to earth, things like this. Yeah. Yeah. So what, you know, the plan that we have when the CIP plan goes through, that's what we will have a building design that will be able to store the rest of our county.
Okay. Thank you. Dave, if you're still on the phone, were you able to hear that?
I'm very comfortable with all of the questions. As we all know, I'm the one who asks about process a lot. So okay. It's my turn. We're taking turns on this. Okay. So I move that we approve the purchase of a pole barn for an estimated amount of $21,500 per the sheriff's request. It's an unbudgeted item. I will. With one half of the cost coming out of the forfeiture fund and the other half coming out of the general fund allocated to the sheriff's budget. Second.
Further discussion? Olson?
Aye.
Kevin?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye.
Thank you very much, Ward.
Thanks again for coming.
Absolutely. And I appreciate the heads up.
I'll just explain my motion for the practical alliance is the maintaining of the need to protect the
investment. Sure. I would agree.
Okay, so we are now done with consent and move on to item 15, public hearing item. And I wonder if Lisa Mark is available.
How did everybody get in this morning? I came in the front door and it was had a wall.
Oh, you have to go on the side. Because they did a good job of making that a good, you know, safe place for public. And did you see all the facility management is done? All the
Yes.
Well, I haven't seen it, though, because I did come in the back since I needed to use the elevator, but I will go down and take a look at it before I leave. Okay. No, there were good directions about if you need to use the elevator, how to get into the building and park. So, yeah.
Is that not
going to
your building?
I don't think I saw it. If I did, I might have.
Oh.
Well, we're waiting for our first item under additional items. I'm going to suggest we go on to number two.
Yeah.
Discussion consideration of wellness policy. Noelle McClatch here. Are you on the phone? Please unmute yourself if you are. Star six.
I was on the phone. It didn't come through.
You had to unmute yourself.
I did.
You did? Okay. Come on. And I just asked Noelle. And she was not able to unmute herself here. Okay, we're going on now with item one, technical difficulties. The phone didn't unmute. So, Assistant Auditor Lisa Markley is here to discuss any budget amendments and publication.
Good morning. Are there any questions on the documentation I sent you, first of all, or do you want to wait until after I go to my little.
What did you
do? I prefer you do your presentation first.
Yeah. Explain and then I'll ask questions.
Okay, so
we did. Unmuted.
we amended the budget. We've amended the budget one time this year already, or early in the fiscal year, and I believe I put it off until the end of my 10th. The majority of this budget amendment is for putting together the remaining salaries needed in all the departments because the only budget is 95% of all the budget. That's what the majority of it is on the expense side. There are a few departments that ask specifically for additional things, so just so you know, I'm the one that puts together the salary portion, and the ones that were actually asked of us were in the auditor's office, some additional costs. I did. So one of the things that is supposed to happen at the Secretary of State level is that the counties are supposed to get revenues for this year's election. $13,900 is what I'm planning on total for this fiscal year for us. I haven't seen a lot of details on that, so I'm not positive. But I did amend part of the revenue in for now and part of the expense in for now. Assuming we'll need some in November. Anyway, in the auditor's office, I do want to apologize. There is a change from what I originally gave you that I actually changed yesterday. Because of the massive amounts of mail we are bringing in, I do not think it's wise to lower our 14,000
in postage.
Okay, so I have changed all the numbers. So that as opposed to a negative, I'm just leaving that where it is, which gives us a budget amendment in our department of $48,000 as opposed to the fact that we do. We just don't know what's in there. We just don't know. We are overwhelmed with the number of requests.
I saw what you were opening yesterday.
Yeah.
And put out the call for help. It was an amazing pile of sales requests and good news, but it's a job there.
Yes. Yeah. So, with that in mind, I did amend that little portion. It changes our income balance by 14,000 in general. The rest of the auditor's office is mainly just to get in line with what we actually spent for school, for city, for the different elections, okay? And those all have offsetting revenues. The treasurer didn't ask for anything, the attorney didn't ask for anything, the sheriff did not ask for anything, obviously the salary man. The animal control did ask for some office supplies and utilities to be increased, minor ones in there. The big thing was the cages that you guys approved back in early in the year. There wasn't enough money budgeted special or friends of animals in order to do that at that point in time, so I said I'll amend it at the end of the year. So that's for the, and those, that and the building are both out of their special animal fund. So I am amending that budget.
And she now has the $75,000 she needs between those two expenses.
She has, oh yeah.
It just wasn't budgeted.
It just wasn't budgeted.
Okay, super correct. Manager. Okay.
Correct. Early in the year, you guys approved a general county betterment, $1,245 for assets. Collins Maxwell Summer School. Mm-hmm. So I'm putting that in there, in general county betterment. The request from secondary roads, as you can see, there's some for roads, $700,000, $90,000 for equipment, $50,000 for snow and ice. The rest is salaries on the kids. Conservation has a whole list of amendments, okay? The buildings and equipment, a lot of those are things that we budgeted that aren't going to happen this year, but are going to happen, just not this year. Or things that have happened that they didn't anticipate. So overall, we're going to lower that budget by $181,000 when it's all said and done. Health does not need any. IRBM, another disclaimer on this one. Yesterday, Ms. Quaker was in the hallway when I was coming from somewhere, and the building that we took out, which was for $33,600, he was gonna put up a building.
Mm-hmm.
Or no, excuse me, it was just for the sprayer, not a building. The sprayer, he had, when they gave me the budget amendment information, the sprayer wasn't going to get done this year, it wasn't going to happen this fiscal year, the plant was closed. Yesterday, apparently, all that changed, and it is going to be delivered in the next 2 weeks. So, that is, I didn't want to pull that out, I talked to Marianne and Mike about it, I don't want to pull that out, so I'm going to leave it in there, so that changed the ending $10,000 also. I did, however, there was offsetting revenue for that in the amount of $13,000. We are still not planning on that coming in this fiscal year. So that's going to kind of be one of those we're going to pay for it this year, and we're going to get the money for it next year.
So we've got another change in the ending fund balance for 36.
In the rural fund.
In the rural fund, okay.
So those are the only two changes that have happened since this all went together. I just thought it was best to get those, because of this, I can't mm-hmm. lower.
So,
given, or raise later, I can only lower.
Right. Given that we just went ahead and approved, acknowledged $136,000 for the sheriff's computer system in the jail for the locks, and he's spending that, and then we just went ahead and approved for the pole barn to house the MRAP. Will that change any of these numbers? You already took them out?
I'm not dealing with those at all because he's not asking for any money for those.
Okay.
He's got the money in his budget.
It's all within what we already allocated to him.
With the exception of that special law enforcement that he's paying for the other half of that.
Right.
I am putting that money in here for him to spend. It is in the fund. He just doesn't have a budget.
Okay.
So I put it
super.
In his amendment.
Okay.
So the additional doesn't change your any balance.
Doesn't change. Okay.
Okay. No.
Thank you.
He's saying he's got the money in his budget to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
So. We're not putting any money in there for it.
Thank you.
Community services, that position not being funded
mm-hmm.
or not happening this year is lowering their salary. But they did ask for increases in rent and funeral services because of all the expenses they've been having.
Right. And in fact, we're going to talk about it later on the agenda today, too, about a request. Down on the agenda, there's a request about that for them that maybe a little bit more money, a change in the
for
income
rent.
For rent, correct? But it's yeah.
So facilities asked for a little bit only in this building, I think.
Mm-hmm.
If you'll notice, there's some of these departments that have a COVID line item. If the expenses are directly related. I am putting a line item in the budgets that are needing it. For tracking purposes at some point in time. For the auditor, my concern was what will the grant look like if we don't say this is the expenses that we have. So knowing full well that was going to happen. The rest of them are mainly for facility budgets.
You are always on top of things, Lisa. Thank you.
There were some requests for a little bit in facilities management for a little bit of increase for a few things. IT did not request anything. Planning and development did request numerous line items, which are all listed there. The big one for mental health, obviously, is the regional payment. And then countywide had lots and lots and lots of little things that needed to be amended. Let me go through a couple of them. We've talked about them. We talked about the budget. Budget time, we also, we've had conversations about them. The medical examiner, at this point in time, the way we're trending, we're going to lose another 50,000 in that line item.
For which line item? I'm sorry?
Medical examiner.
Oh,
very
hey,
top
right.
of that page.
Yep, I see it. Yep, yep,
okay.
Yep.
Sheriff's. Okay, so the sheriff's medical care, we moved, and this is the first year that as opposed to the sheriff having extra in his medical, we moved it over to countywide because it's for the unplanned. It's not for the medical contract.
Right.
We budgeted $85,000 in that line item. We're going to turn to $40,000 higher than that this year. There was a couple of big expenses, so I'm hoping upon hope that this is not the way it was going to be. But at this point, I can't see.
Right. One of those, that was the prisoner who had the difficult pregnancy, right? In part.
Also for services, it's going to be $50,000 higher. I have to say that that's one of those line items that we put $30,000 a year in, and we very rarely spend $30,000 a year on coroner services. There are at least three, from what I've been able to tell from the claim, being held in juveniles that are being adult, ways to adult court, and that's where that's coming from. Okay? So that's higher than it trends typically also. Some offset dollars for YSS that were way early in the year. Oops, we missed these. Those should have gotten paid, and we amended into this year, so I went ahead and amended those in. We had not budgeted for the housing needs study, but I put it in here because we get paid, I assume. Historical Society, Home Based Iowa, those are things that you guys have talked about, discussed, gone through. I'm just making sure we have enough money in line items to take care of it. I did go ahead and lower a couple, education training and contract labor county-wise, because we're not going to use that, so we'll use those dollars. Property tax rentals. I'm amending an audit for this fiscal year because it ended up that we paid for last year. We didn't get last year's audit until June of 19, which meant we didn't pay for it until this fiscal year, so we're going to pay for two this fiscal year, so look at it. That's all general fund dollars. And then court costs for criminal. This is a line item that the attorney's office uses. Again, typically a $50,000 line item is running about $10,000. Indigent court costs, we only budget $2,500, and that's trending high this year. And insurance reserve, we had two vehicles from the sheriff's office that were totaled. One of them was actually paid for by the other insurance company, and one we had to eat and pay for those two vehicles because we don't have collision. Yeah, here's the sheriff's special projects I was saying I was going to amend in. They only budgeted like $7,000. So, total amendment is $2.7 million. As you can see, I broke it down in by fund, and the mental health fund is the biggest one for expenses. For revenues,
well, I mean, the mental health fund is just over $1 million by itself.
Yeah.
Right. I mean,
right,
so
right, yeah.
Then when you take a look at that,
right,
take it out, it's like, okay, well, that isn't so quite as bad. Yeah. Okay.
Like
it's
I said,
that is the last 5%. So.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So
it's out of the.
It's unanticipated.
Right.
Right.
Right. Right.
Right.
Right.
Right. And then there are, like I said, again, the majority of the revenues are my analysis of revenues. I did clarify with the treasurer's office. Ted did say that I was pretty on track here. He thought with the two amendments I was doing for his department.
Okay.
Interest and investments have already hit what this is. What this does to it, it makes it like 400 and some thousand. It's going to hit that. The sheriff's office, Connie did go through the revenues with me. Care of prisoners is down, obviously. But there are some increases in some of the places. The big amounts are secondary roads. We're lowering that GO line by $5 million. At the beginning of the year, when I did the budget amendment, I amended it $8 million to do that. I amended it $8 million because that was what we were planning on selling the bonds. We're only going to sell $3 million. So I'm lowering his revenues by $5 million so that we can put that money in there and start those projects. And then conservation, they're down a whole bunch of their revenues, including $46,000.
Yeah, sure.
Now, understand that does go in capital, conservation capital project. So it's not affecting the general fund, but it affects the conservation fund. There is also planning and development has had a large $150,000 windfall of building for the wind turbine early in the year, so I'm adding that revenue. That's how I rolled it. And then I went through all the different countywide services. So overall, it looks like we're going negative on the amendments for revenues, but we're actually behind the capital position. Because $5 million, that's a big lift. So we're increasing, in the general fund, we're increasing our expenses by add $14,000 to that, about $911,000, and we're amending the revenues and by tweaking that, so about $600,000, $500,000 are taken out of the ending fund. Overall, this lowers our overall revenues by 7% and raises our overall expenses by 5% from the original, or from the most recent budget amendment. I gave you a sheet to help you with the ending fund balance projections that I'm using on this, so you can see where the funds are. As far as what's restricted, what's committed, what's assigned in the general fund. Okay. At this point in time, with the new dollars that are just relayed to you, we have about 26%. Assuming everything goes as planned. And of that, about $270,000 is above the 25% fee. The supplemental fund is at 30%. As you can see, the committed funds for the ETF at the end of this fiscal year, I'm assuming you're going to be at $993,000. So that's where we're at with that. And then the rest of the things we've talked about for your money.
That was a very helpful sheet. Thank you.
So, in 25 words or less, revenues are down because we're not borrowing. And expenses are up mainly because of mental health and also because we put in the 5% of salaries that we assume we're going to, so it's not like we're spending crazy.
Correct.
We're not getting the money in that we anticipate.
Correct.
That's fair?
Okay.
So for this year, COVID has not done, we don't see the effects from COVID. It'll be fiscal year 21. Is it where you anticipate?
That's what my assumption is on the revenue side, you mean?
Yes.
On the revenue side, yeah, that would be my assumption. The revenues, as I said from the very beginning, 6% of our revenues is 5%. So the interest on investments is going to, be an issue. But at this point in time, he was trending way higher than he had anticipated anyway. So that's okay. Local option sales tax, that is one of those things. I am amending some dollars into that revenue. One of the situations with both option sales tax is we get information every year in August telling us what they're projecting 95% of our local option sales tax is going to be for the fiscal year. And then we get a reconciliation payment when the actual numbers come through the Department of Revenue. So my assumption at this point in time is that when we get that Department of Revenue,
spreadsheet in August, our low cost sales tax dollars will be lower. And that in November, when they reconcile for the point for FY 20, they may not give us any money to reconcile it up. I don't know that for a fact, but I have to assume that's the way it's
sure. Okay, thank you.
All participants are muted. All participants are unmuted.
Okay, well, I've unmuted because somebody was not able to mute themselves. So if anybody got some, it's not going to work. Pardon me.
All participants are muted and they can unmute themselves.
Linda, this is Noelle. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now. You are unmuted.
Oh, yay. Okay.
Great. Excuse me, Lisa. I was wanting to make sure our next presenter was able to get on. I thought we were pretty much.
I do have a question.
Okay.
I don't know, Lisa Markley, okay. Did you see this edition of the Facets magazine? It's the newest edition, May 2020, put out.
Oh, yeah, I'm glad for it.
Okay, so I just wanted to make it clear for anybody who'd be listening. As I read through it, you were interviewed about the fund balance, some money not being allocated. The article is actually about homelessness and what would there be more money available for maybe to fund social services. And since the emphasis is on homelessness, I just want to make it clear for anyone who may have read it that Lisa was very clear that we didn't know what we were going to really end up on. But so please don't take a look at that estimated number that was in there is the amount of money that would be available for us to spend on homeless services. That's really what I'm saying is, and I say it even doubly now that we're about $270,000 of what you're saying we may have in above our minimum for the ending fund balance. And it just so happens the number in here that stands out most is $300,000, which is close. So I just want to make sure people don't misunderstand that. As they might read it. So,
And that that was from the information I sent to you,
yes.
When the reporter had asked you, I think the reporter had asked the question, and then he emailed me and wanted to know what information I provided to you guys.
So sure. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with it. And in fact, you're quoted here saying, but these haven't been applied yet.
Right.
So, I mean, I think that, yeah, it's a very good factual representation. It's just knowing from my previous career, people don't always read what's on or interpret what's on the piece of paper the same way. So I thought I'd take that opportunity, especially with it close to some of the events. So thanks.
Any other questions? Do you need a motion?
Here's what I need from you. Just blessing to send this publication with those two modifications I told you about a few minutes ago or earlier for the two departments. And that's all I really need. We'll have a public hearing regarding all of it on May 26th. And it will be the regular board meeting, and at that point in time, we can lower the expenses, but we can raise them. So that was why I want to make sure you have as much information as you can going forward. Or, at this point, you can't raise the expenses after that.
I don't know that we have the formal shortage of last year.
No.
We can certainly say that we are in agreement
okay.
with your, all right. your direction on this for your head.
And I don't understand why my unmute didn't work, but I really should
have
a little bit planning up.
Noelle tried to unmute herself when I was trying to go over and she couldn't, but I just got her text to see if she could, and now she's passing
So just so clear, we don't need to do a motion, is
right.
what you're saying, even though it says because it only says consideration. I just want to make sure that we're following processing. Right. So.
Do you want
okay.
a motion?
Just consideration.
What we do.
Yeah, it's a motion.
Okay, fine.
I have LH.
Yes, so I move that we move forward with sending the budget amendment to publication with the changes as presented by Deputy Auditor Markley for, I believe the two areas were the IVRM and was it?
Elections.
And elections, yes.
I second.
Further discussion? Not
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
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 You're blessed. You have a phone.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Elizabeth. She takes chocolate, I hear.
Noelle, are you on the line still?
I thank you.
Great.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good
morning. Good morning. Good morning. We're on discussion and consideration of the wellness process on 7-day review. What is planning your 7-day review?
Yes, I have just a couple people comment that it was fine, other than that I did not receive any feedback.
I have no comment. I don't have a comment either. I would move we approve the wellness policy as presented. Second.
Further discussion? Hearing none. Olson?
Aye.
Seven.
Aye.
Murphy? Aye. Policy is approved. Thank you, Noel.
Thank you.
Now we are going to item 3, which is discussion consideration the first step of the Ames Urban Prince Plan. And Jerry Moore, are you on the line and are you unmuted?
I'm on the line. I think I'm unmuted.
I hear you, Jerry.
Okay, good morning, Board. This is the first step of the Ames River Fringe Plan amendment process, and what you have before you is a request from Brad Stumbo, is Fox Engineering, and he's representing Bishop Farms, and they own the land that Martin Marietta is operating their extraction use on Riverside Road, and again, this is the first stage of the amendment process. The City of Ames City Council took action to support allowing Bishop Farms to submit a request on behalf of Martin Marietta at their April 14th meeting this year. And so our process requires two of the three entities to support allowing an application to be submitted. In this case, the City of Ames supported it. The Board of Supervisors supports allowing an application to be submitted. The item that will be before you will be a request to divide about 9 acres of a 47-acre parcel where the scale house and the office and drive area is located. Currently, that property is designated Rural Transitional Residential Area, and to do this proposed division requires this land use designation change to General Industrial Area. So again, this is the first stage, and we're just requesting permission to submit an application, and with that, I'd be happy to answer questions.
Jerry,
is
this on what side of the line is there? What direction?
It would be just west of where their main access is, off of Riverside Road.
There's residences there. Is this going to be? I asked for Matt, but I think you didn't get the email. I emailed you.
Oh.
I think your mailbox.
Yeah. There was a bond that was submitted. And it was placed on the agenda center that shows the actual what the amendment will be. But it's where all the trucks enter into the main access.
Just to the left of that drive in?
Yeah, it's where the auto offices and the scale house. They would like to divide about 9 of those acres and adjoin it with 111 acres where most of that operation is. But before they can submit this plat of survey to do this division, it requires this land use designation change request to be reviewed. And this, the second stage, if the board approves this first stage, would require all three entities to approve that land use amendment change.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any questions on that?
I guess I'm trying to visualize too. So it's, you said it's west of the mine, and is it on the north side of the road?
It would be on the north side of the road where the main access is into the extraction use, and the access where the trucks enter and exit.
Right.
Mark Marietta.
So how close is it to the nearest home?
Yeah.
I can't find the map. If I'm on some land development, Jerry?
I
think it's part of the memo.
Actually, no. I mean, it's not part of the memo because at least what I downloaded only had the memo. It didn't have any the map as part.
So I have this.
Boy, I remember seeing that too. Where is
it? I have it under the attachment. That says the what city council?
Oh, the council action summary.
And it's at the bottom.
Okay, got it.
Hold on a second. We're getting there, Jerry.
I've got it, yep.
It's just easier when you have somebody here sitting up on the screen.
Yeah.
So.
Where the office is and the scale, there's no adjacent dwellings.
Okay, so it's attached to the AA's information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's just that strip, a narrow strip to the west of where they currently are, and you're saying they currently have what on it?
There is a office, scale house, some maneuvering driveways, lanes. They're primarily used by the trucks that enter off that main drive.
So the rest of that part is going to stay in rural transitional residential?
The balance of that parcel, and that 47 acres.
And there's a house just to the west of that blue line that shows the area, right? How close is the house? I'm just trying to figure out where it's at.
Yeah, I can tell you.
Hi guys, this is Amelia. I have a map up here if you want me to try to measure the house.
Okay.
Yeah, it's about 1,800 lineal feet from the dwelling on the parcel to the west from where the office is. So it's over a quarter of a mile.
Well, I guess.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead,
Jerry. I was just going to say they're trying to get all of their operations on one large parcel. I think it has something to do with taxation. That they're trying to achieve this division. But again, the item before you is not the actual land use designation change. It's whether or not you will accept entertaining an application to be submitted to be reviewed.
Okay. Yeah. That's not a final decision. It's a process.
Oh, no.
Okay. Are there any other questions? Supervisors?
I have no questions. No.
Okay. You're needing a motion here. To accept the request by Bradley Stumbo?
Yeah, to be allowed to submit the application for the board of supervisors to review. And again, it will require the city of Ames, city council, and the city of Gilder to review the land use designation change. And all three will be approved before you support it.
Okay, so I understand.
So, make a motion for supplemental for the bridge.
Oh, I had a question before.
Excuse me, leave that question.
Yep. So, Jerry, just for clarification, so obviously from what you're just saying, then this would have to come before us again. Because this is just would be just allowing them to submit the application. They would have it would the proposal would have to come before us again to determine would we want to vote yay or nay that they move forward with this. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And will this be submitted?
The first step.
And will this be submitted to Gilbert as well? They haven't acted on it.
I don't know if the actual initial request will be or has been. I know the city of Ames, city council took action in April. And again, the policies in the Ames River Fringe only require two of the three to support allowing the application to be submitted.
But the application will be submitted to all three of the parties.
That's correct.
And then all three would have to vote.
Or waive. So all three we have to vote on, yes. Would be allowed to vote on, correct?
That's correct.
And
it requires all three entities to take action, and they would all three need to support this land use designation change in order for it to be changed.
Okay,
gotcha.
So we're just
okay.
Building the process along.
That's correct.
Not making any final decisions, and everybody still has to change their own final decision. So the board's action may be accomplished with a motion, and that would be to allow Stumbo to present this to the receipt. What we have on the agenda. The agenda center doesn't, it says it's the first step being driven for an interest. Okay. So, we're going to turn a motion to approve the request from Bradley Stumbo for parcel number
05234255.
What's
that?
Mm-hmm.
So moved.
Second. Any further discussion? Okay, all in favor of the motion? Oh, excuse me, Patton.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Murphy. Aye. Motion is carried.
Thank you, Olson.
Certainly. Okay, then we will head on to, let's see, that was number three. So for discussion consideration of general assistance and veterans affairs income guidelines and rent and utility assistance maximums. We have Greville Klein, Aaron Reward, and Carla Webb. Are any or all of you on the phone? Please unmute.
Good morning, board.
Good morning.
Yes, I'm here with Aaron Reworks and Brett McLean, so all three of us are present. We have distanced ourselves. We're using our conference room phone. We'll go ahead here and start with our presentation. I'm going to start off talking about the general assistance information, and then we'll turn it over to Brett to talk about the Veterans Affairs information. In November 2019, Supervisor Olson asked Brett McLean and I to complete a review and impact of a 10% increase to the Veterans Affairs and General Assistance Income Guidelines and the impact of increasing the rent and utility assistance maximums by 10%. I'll share a little bit about the General Assistance Program falls under Iowa Code Chapter 252, Support of the Poor. Iowa Code 252.1 defines a poor person to mean those who have no property, exempt or otherwise, and are unable because of physical or mental disabilities to earn a living by labor. This section shall not be construed to forbid aid to needy persons who have some means when the board shall be of opinion that this may be conducive to their welfare and best interests of the public. The Story County General Assistance Income Guidelines were initially established several years ago with consideration of the Family Investments Program, FIP, and the food assistance amount. Back then, individuals who were receiving these, both of these benefits at their full amount would have been considered over income and not eligible for general assistance. In 2008, a change was implemented to the general assistance guidelines. guidelines where food assistance was no longer counted as income. The income guidelines, to our knowledge, have not been changed for several years. I've looked back to at least 2006, and they have not been adjusted. Food assistance amounts have increased while the FIP payment amount has remained the same since 1990, is the information I've been able to collect. I'm going to refer now to our PowerPoint, so if the board and public members would like to pull that up, we'll walk through the study that we completed. To start with, we reviewed a 20% sampling of applications where the applicant was over the income guidelines. We looked at fiscal year 18, 19, and at the time of that we completed the study for FY 20, we looked at from July 1 of 19 to November 30th of 19. This equated to 68 applications being reviewed in FY 18, 77 in FY 19, and 37 in FY 20. By increasing the income guidelines by 10%, we determined 6 individuals in the sampling met the income guidelines and not had other reasons in eligibility. So on slide 2, you will see our current income guidelines and what a 10% increase to those guidelines would look like. On slide 3, that breaks it out by fiscal year, what we found. The average monthly income of the applications we reviewed, the average amount that individuals were over the income guidelines, the average amount or the number of applicants then who would meet the proposed income guidelines. And we also took that a step further and looked at, even though they met our income guidelines, would they still be potentially eligible when looking at other criteria. So we did find where it would back off then some of the individuals would still remain ineligible when we looked at other criteria. Slide 3 here then reflects, I believe that's slide 4. Yes, slide 4 then reflects what our current utilities and rental assistance amounts are, what a 10% increase would look like, and then we also provided consideration or recommendation from our office as well. We found that it's probably easier to round up or round down when looking at the different assistance amounts as individuals opted need to seek assistance from other agencies. So what we did then next in our study is we reviewed all applications where rent and utility assistance had been provided for FY 18, 19, and 20, again through November 30th of 19, to determine what the impact a 10% rent and utility assistance increase would have. So slide 5 then reflects what that impact would be. And the numbers we have here is based on the review of applications where we had actually provided assistance. The thing to note in this table is it does not include assistance amounts for those who would, if the income guidelines were increased, what the impact could be then there for rent and utility assistance. I did try to calculate potential impact for those increased guidelines, looking at a family household maximum of 600 for rent and utilities. So for FY 18, that could potentially be an additional impact of 6,000, so a total impact of 9,413. FY 19 could be a potential impact of 12,000 for a total budget impact of 16,362.
So
next we information from other counties on what their income guidelines, assistance amounts, and policies are. You can find a summary of that information on slide 6. So I walked through that fairly quickly. Are there any questions on the study or the information we've presented?
Supervisor Olson had a question.
My question, going back to when you did your recalculation of what the budget would have looked like, is just I'd like to confirm how you kind of did that, estimated what it would have made for a difference in the budget. I took the difference for fiscal year 18, 19, and 20 also individually, and I multiplied them times 5, given that you did a 20%. Review, and if that 20% were pretty representative, then I came up with slightly higher impact to the budget, the high being in fiscal year 19, that had there been the increase in the amounts and the increase in the income limits, it had been about $21,000 for the entire year impact. So thanks. I think you guys did a really good job here, given, kind of my initial walk into this, which was that we had not changed the income qualifications, increased them, or had changed the amount of assistance for several years. And really all I'd asked for is what would happen if we did 2% for every one of the years. The rate of inflation, roughly, where would we be at now? So thank you for that.
You're welcome. You had asked about how I calculated potential impact. I as well took it times 5.
Okay.
But I'm wondering if we're off on slide 3. So we've got the number of applicants who would meet the proposed guidelines. So, like for fiscal year 19, that would be 6, but then I subtracted out 2 from that because while they would have met the guidelines, they wouldn't have qualified for other reasons.
That's probably what it is. You're right. Thank you.
Okay. You bet.
Okay, so Carla, we should say again, if we approve the increase in the guidelines and the rent and utility assistance maximums, what are we increasing your budget?
So for FY19, that potential in total impact to the budget could have been about $16,360. For rent, we budget $60,000, and for utilities, it's $6,000. I didn't mention, but when Lisa Markley was speaking earlier, she had indicated we are requesting an amendment to the rent FY20 budget of $4,000 because we're concerned we're going to max out that line item. Right now, through the end of April, we've expended $51,270 for rent.
So the requested $4,000 for FY20 does not include the increase in the maximum. It's the current rate, correct?
Correct.
So what do you estimate? You said 19 would have been 16,000 more if these changes had been in effect. What would it be in 20 then? Can you think about that?
Yeah, we didn't drill that down, and the reason for that was is when we completed the study, it was through the end of November, and at that, when we looked at the increase to the income guidelines, there wouldn't have been anybody eligible during that time frame. So we don't have a number necessarily to go on for that. For FY18, it could have been 10 individuals that would have been eligible. FY19 could have been 20. So, if we average that out, even that could be 10 folks at 6,000.
So what additional, would you need additional funds? What would you need in FY20 if we approved this package?
For FY20? Probably, we're looking at, there's procedurally, there's some stuff that we would need to do. The rent is and any updates or amendments to that manual do need to have a resolution by the board. And so we've got a process that we would need to go through. And I don't know if we could get that process done in time to make any adjustments for FY20.
So if you look at a 21 budget, so 4,000 is just to get you to 20. So for 21, you would be looking at something. You would need to bring that back to us. Or do you think?
Yes. Yeah, I think we would need to put that back, and maybe that would be in the form of a budget amendment as we went throughout the year to kind of see what the impact was. I would estimate probably anywhere from 6,000 to 16,000 potentially.
So if we approve this, and that's what I was wondering, if we approve this, these changes today, that you would go back and revise some things, make it effective for FY21, but we would need to know that we would be looking at needing to supplement your budget by anywhere from $6,000 to $16,000, and maybe more if that's additional $4,000 you need in 20 for rent if it's covered in 21 and the increase will change. So I would look at, we're talking about $20,000.
Yeah, potentially. And I think what we're looking for today would be direction from the board. If you are interested in increasing the income guidelines and the rent assistance amount, I think that's what we're looking for, is direction. And then we would go through the process of updating the manual and doing the resolution, working with Ethan on that, and then bringing the amendments to the manual back to the board.
Supervisor Hedden has a question.
Yeah, Carla, I have a couple questions for you. It might be in your documentation here, and I keep going back and forth, and I just can't find which one it's in. So how many individuals did you provide rental assistance to this year, whether rent assistance or utility assistance? And if we increase the amount by 10%, for example, how many do you anticipate? How many more would you anticipate potentially serving?
Just a moment here, I'm going to pull up our most recent general assistance report. So through March of this year, we have assisted, these are combined numbers, so I don't have it broken out specific for for rent and utility assistance. Through March, we assisted 137 individuals or families overall for the general assistance program. That could include, or does include some for burial assistance.
Okay.
What I can tell you, for information that I have easily at my fingertips right now, is when we look at the income guidelines, total applications that we had for when individuals were over income, so for FY18, we had a total of 340 applicants. FY19, we had a total of 385. And then in FY20, at the end of November, we had 185. I could drill that down some more to be able to tell you exactly how many households the rent and utility assistance equates to, because the report that we do encompasses all assistance.
Sure. I'm just wondering, because that just gives me a better, I guess, financial frame of mind as to where we're looking at. Are you looking at 6,000 to 16,000, or could it potentially be greater than that if you have more people that are eligible?
I think it would be that 6,000 to 16,000, because what we were looking at here for the data was specific to rent and utility assistance.
So that's back to slide 3 in a way, and then you did kind of, you extrapolated or projected then from there based upon the number of people who would meet the proposed guidelines as opposed to before.
Yes.
But the economic downturn, are your numbers going up still? I mean, things are going to go up?
I think in time they will go up. Erin, are you?
I think we've seen, this is Erin, we've seen pretty normal activity for now. You know, beginning of the month is usually greater. But the other aspect of it is here for a while is that the stimulus check that people will be getting is considered income. So there will be people that will not be eligible due to receiving their stimulus check.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Not for Erin and Carla.
Okay, Board, do you want to just, or should we go on to Brett?
Yeah, that's fine.
Let's do that together. Brett, are you there and unmuted? Star six?
You bet.
You're in the same room.
Right here. Can you hear me okay?
We can hear you.
Okay. And before I go through my section of the PowerPoint, just to bring you up to date, so this study was done a few months ago. As of April 30th, looking at our budget, we've used 47% in the rent item, line item, and 50% in utilities. Rent balance is $2,103 and utilities is at $500. And to look at who we've assisted in that area, this is just for this fiscal year. There was four for rent, one for utilities. So with that in mind, I will move through our PowerPoint here. And partly, Board, because county benefits is just one-third of the benefits that we're doing. We're also doing benefits under the state VA and federal VA. And under federal, in the last year, we brought in $24.9 million to veterans in Story County. Also, in VA study, sample 20, you'll see the numbers are a little bit lower than what you just seen. Denials for 2018 were issued 55 denials, 2019, 45 denials, and in 2020, 16 denials. Taking that up to December of 2019. Now, on the flip side of that, on who did we assist during those same times? In 2018, we assisted 12. 2019, it went down 50% to 6. And at the time of the study, we had just assisted 1. Looking at who is eligible for rent in the last 2.5 years, FY 2018, the 12 veterans that were assisted, the amount of money in assistance was $5,805. In 2019, we assisted the 6 with $2,840, and at the time of the study in 2020, assisted 1 veteran, $397. Looking at FY18, the budget was $5,000. And in 2018, we used $5,805. 2019, we increased the budget to $5,500. And we used $2,840. As you can see, that drop of 50%. And in FY20, it was $4,000. And we've used $697 as of February 27th. I'll give you the other numbers as of today. For one person, the rent paid is $450 with utilities $500. Two or more, rent paid is $550 with utilities of $600. Going on with the study, FY18, the average household size is 2.3. Average income, $1,291. Average over the current income guidelines by $608. Average over the proposed income guidelines, $538. Two would meet the proposed income guidelines. and then we have one that was denied for, would be denied for other reasons, and nine who could not meet the proposed income guidelines. 2019, average household size was 3.3, average income 1,261, over the current income guidelines by $365, over proposed income guidelines $275. Three would meet the proposed income guidelines, and three others would be denied for other reasons, and six who would not meet the proposed income guidelines. 2020, average household 2.3, $1,700 on the average monthly income. Average over the income guidelines, 853. Average over the proposed income guidelines, 752. Zero would have met the proposed income guidelines. Meet proposed income guidelines, however, denied for other reasons, zero, and does not meet proposed income guidelines, four. System comparisons, also Blackhawk, Jasper, Johnson, and Dallas. And each of those worked off of poverty guidelines. Blackhawk is at 150% of federal poverty. And the table there shows household one would be 1,507. Two in the home, 2,030. Three, 2,552, and four, 3,975. Jasper County is 100% of poverty. Johnson County, 100%, and Dallas, 100% of poverty. The difference there is when they work off of poverty, is we're looking at gross income.
Fred, excuse me. Is Dallas 100 or 150?
Dallas is 150. Well, yeah, Blackhawk and Dallas 150. Johnson and Jasper's at 100. Going into the next slide, so I have it laid out our current income guidelines. Household of one through household of nine. I won't read all those numbers there. You can see all those, and then what they would be. What the income guidelines would be if we were able to increase them by 10%. And then, and oh, by the way, the Commission of Veterans Affairs, they're in favor of the 10%. And then the big step would be that 100% of poverty. Maybe that's something we do on down the road as we get closer to those numbers, if we were to increase from year to year. But that's what 100% of poverty income guidelines would look like. So the difference of 664 at the 10% increase to 1,041 at 100% of poverty increase.
Brett, this is Lisa. Are you currently at the 150% of poverty? Or are you at the 100?
No, we're on the left there where it says current. We are at those numbers currently.
I'm sorry, yes, okay.
In my recollection, 21 years as the VA director, that we've changed those numbers twice. And if I was to say, when did we change them last, I'd say 2004.
So.
Is what I kind of remember. So we're on those numbers. But as you can see, that would be a pretty big step to go from current to 100%.
Right, gotcha, thank you.
Yep.
And it would be a lot higher than what we would then have for general assistance.
Right. Yeah.
Whereas now,
and,
it's going to set you'd be a little above. I'm trying to go back to the line. With your 10% rate, you'd be a little above what our general assistance guidelines would be with an increase of 10%. Is that correct?
Correct. Those numbers have always been different between VA and general assistance. Okay.
But to have
a little bit more, yeah.
Way
skewed
might not.
And one thing I would add is I wouldn't look at an increase in our budget
we could assist a few more people by this 10% increase, we just wouldn't turn back in as much money at the end of the fiscal year. So,
because you have gone down significantly in how much you spent in the last 2 years, but your revenue has stayed stable, the line item stayed about where it was or higher.
Yep. Yep, yep.
So you could go a 10% increase on your guideline. Where would you be on what your... You are not asking, you're not suggesting, however, that your assistance maximum is being increased during this company. Oh, so one person, your grant is 450 with utilities 500. You're not suggesting that go up, you're just suggesting the guideline be changed. Correct?
Correct.
Whereas with general assistance, you're looking at both, or to have calculated both.
But we're looking at to assist more people with the same amount of money.
Yeah.
You know,
gotcha.
per assistance. 450 for one, utility 500, and then 550 for two. If utilities are included, 600. Yep, correct.
Got it. Thank you.
Well, then, Linda, this is Carla. So I think it's a general assistance amount for the maximum assistance amounts were increased. I think they would then line up with what Veterans Affairs has presently.
I've got 529 and 639. That's about
Yeah, you have to look at their proposal.
Yeah.
On. I think it's slide four.
Proposal is 450, 500 with utilities, and 600 for families.
Okay. So, yeah, then the VA assistance amount for rent and utilities would be like. But the income guidelines, as Brett said, have always been different with the VA guidelines, a little bit after the VA guidelines.
So if I heard correctly, it sounds like Brett is seeking the 10% increase in the guidelines to help more people, but not increasing more budget allocation to it, just within that current budget allocation, because obviously it's looking like he's helping one or two, well, it varies from year to year. For Carla, you are looking at both the 10% increase that would also have a budgetary impact, potentially of $6,000 to $16,000.
Correct.
Okay.
Any other questions?
And would both of these be, if this moves forward, would impact fiscal year 21 budget or fiscal year, or is it calendar year 21?
Fiscal year 21.
Okay.
Starting this July 1st.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think when Carla earlier mentioned the manual and the time it would take involved, I started thinking, okay, are we still referring to fiscal year or calendar year? So, okay.
Fiscal 21.
Once again, Brett, thank you for the work you did, Aaron did, I know Aaron worked on both of them, but just all of you together to do this, just to figure out where we would be if we kind of kept up with a 2% per year kind of cost of inflation situation.
You're welcome.
I'm going to start, and if anybody else has anything to talk about.
I was just pondering, I guess.
I'm pondering, too. I'm really torn on this, but I'll just start talking. We have a hiring freeze on right now as a county because we are concerned about what our revenues will look like in our flex one. We're only approving essential positions and requests that we brought to the board. That's something to consider. I saw in the Tribune yesterday that the city of Ames has put out some fairly dramatic kind of concerns about their revenues for next year. We haven't done a top work on that right now, but we know that revenues are going to be impacted. We also know that there are real needs out there, and we haven't increased these, you know, either our income guidelines or what we are helping people with in terms of the amount. I think this is one of the, I think it's an easier because Veterans Affairs already has the money in its budget for what Brett is suggesting. I think maybe that's an easier one to look at. I'm very torn. I'm concerned about people out there who are needing general assistance right now. We will see more people needing general assistance, and the 5th to 16, it's kind of wide range, and it may be that our actual expenses will be more. So that's just where I am. I'm very conflicted on this at this point, looking at, you know, making sure that we're not overextending ourselves as a county at the same time, helping county residents who are in a bad situation right now. So that's it.
Yeah, I have the same type of concerns, because I'd certainly hate with the budget we've got proposed for fiscal year 21 already, what that impact's going to be, you know, going forward. And I think Carla made the comment, or Aaron did, is they're kind of maintaining right now with their numbers. Might we see an increase? I think with the economic downturn, I'm going to assume that we probably are. The social service person in me has one way of thinking, and the fiscal person in me has another way of thinking on this. But I do think that there are going to be people struggling, people that have been either lost their job, they've been furloughed, that people are going to need. They're going to need assistance. I just want to make sure that if this were something that we want to move forward on, we actually have the money that we're able to commit to it, versus coming back at a later time and saying, we've overextended ourselves, and have to take it back for a next, you know, or not reevaluate in the next fiscal year. Once you've increased, it's kind of hard to cut back on it. So you want to make sure that you are able to maintain what you propose.
So I'd like to talk about the article and it's basically Ames's concern right now. You know, they're projecting a $9 million loss of revenue. They have enterprise being number one, as I understand it. They're concerned about reduction in the rates. Or the usage of power, correct? I mean, so looking at their $9 million, where that comes, we don't run a power company, we don't, you know, do those kinds of things. So when we started with COVID and started talking about the budget, and I did some quick calculations, and I think, you know, I maybe scared everybody a little bit and said, but hey, if all our local option sales tax goes away, and if we don't get a single penny from investment revenue, and et cetera, maybe we're looking close to $1 million if all that happens. We've heard from Lisa Markley that at least so far the initial indicator is that's not quite as bad. Also, we've heard that we're going to end this fund year with about $270,000. So of all the places that we may be asked to put it, okay, one of them is I think about the people who literally have no other resource. And I'd like to remind you that this income is so far below what people would be collecting for unemployment. The comment about stimulus check was good for some people. But this is really, when we look at the numbers here, these are the people who really are one step away
from not having the lights on or or not having housing immediately within, okay? So I think we could look at, we could cap it, that we would approve, say, $25,000, and we would move that money over from our fiscal year 20 to 21, particularly into, you know, starting for fiscal year 21, giving them that little additional budget, and say, this is it. Obviously, they report to us quarterly to tell us what's happening. I feel that us doing a hiring freeze was significant and affects our budget much more than if we would do $25,000 over here to ascertain how many people we might be able to help. Because these are people who are clearly, they're below the poverty level already.
Right. Carla or Aaron, if I recall correctly, folks that are seeking general assistance for either rent or utilities, generally, they are close to already being evicted, or they've already gotten notice from the power companies that their power may go off because they have not because of that. Is that, am I correct on that?
This is Carla. We don't require an eviction notice or disconnect notice. So, I mean, we do see folks that are in those situations, but we also see folks who are trying to avoid receiving that type of a notice.
Okay, it's just other agencies that oftentimes request that. I was not sure if you did as well or not. So okay.
You want me to make the motion and go from there?
Sure.
Okay. So I move that we approve the income guidelines for both general assistance and veterans assistance as presented at the 10% increase, and that there be an adjustment for the general assistant rent and utilities as proposed by community services staff.
I'll second, but can you clarify what you, on the latter part of your proposal?
Sure. Brett isn't asking for any change in his in his rent or utility assistance, which is why I had to break out community services. They're asking for a change in their recommendation.
I did. One, because that's one way I can ask the questions.
So what would you like to, I have probably asked the question too, but you're wanting to discuss further.
I did. That was my one clarification, is how she did the proposal on that. So if you have a question, go ahead. It may generate another question.
Maybe I have a concern. We've also been asked, whether the county will have any monies available to help strong communities.
Mm-hmm.
And we said we don't know. We need to look at our own. Before that happens, we need to have some pretty hard and fast estimates of our own revenues. That's how we call it conversation, but make sure we have money to help. There is going to be a survey going out. I'm concerned about, and I know we're just dealing with one item here, but it kind of relates to where are we going to be going with this. Because I anticipate there will be lots of asks from various areas in the next year. And I'm just wanting us to go slow and be careful and make sure we know we have the money. Just because we have a hiring freeze doesn't mean we're going to save all that money on that, because a lot of where we get our movement in employees is people leaving detention officer positions. We've already, approved one hire there because we deemed it essential, and that was, we put a request under hiring. I don't know, but that's when where we have most of our attrition. I don't know if we're going to save very much out of a hiring pool. I think it's important to have it, and we look at every single position. But our reality is that's where we get a lot of our vacancies, and that's probably where we're going to end up most of the time, saying we've got to have those positions. So I just have to again say I'm concerned. I'm not saying I'm going to vote against this, but I'm saying I want us to go slow, and I think we better almost look at this as an exception rather than every time somebody brings something to this table, we're going to say, oh, we can do that or we can do that. We'll find ourselves in the wrong
group. I agree, and I think I think that's part of my struggle with it, where I said my human services background and then my fiscal person that comes in as well. We don't know what the legislature is going to do when they go back. They're going to go back at some point, whether it'll be in May or June or what. And if there will be things that they do not fulfill, that's going to impact. Longstanding commitments to local government. How that's going to impact as well. So
I'd like to reiterate, the staff brought it up, that they said from a formal request from me, but this, I originally commented about how far we were behind in keeping up just with Social Security increases, okay? When we had someone who appealed a decision, when was that, Lisa? Hadn't you just come on board? So it was a year ago. Okay, so this is not something I brought forward or asked staff to research so they could bring it forward related to COVID. This is about the county for a long time ignoring financial situations that, and ignoring that reality. And so I'd like to point that out. I know that we're being asked to do it now. I'd like to tell you I think I sent you an email, but just to remind you that when we went through the budget discussion in January, and I was reminding you about this, we also were looking at possibly filling the position for the homeless prevention specialist. And there was a discussion up here, a little bit of a exchange, which Supervisor Merkin said to me, so if we go ahead and approve this position, are we off the table about maybe increasing these amounts? Because we'd have someone who could be helping people, especially with possible homelessness. Okay? And I said, I think that sounds like it would be reasonable. So, but staff did do the work, and staff contacted me and said, hey, what do we do about this? Spread it out and talk to the VA commission about it. And I said to them, we've got a hiring freeze on now, so let's bring back what we looked at as a relief for a few more people. And I think that's it. The other thing I want to comment is about with the request from the small communities. The original request, which Lynn and I heard verbally, Lisa, you weren't on the jurisdictional update that night, but what was said by the mayor of Collins was, I've got some self-employed small business people here who can't, or I don't think they can feed their families. I mean, they have no income coming in. This might help them a little bit if they've got just a little bit of income coming in. And it's an immediate response as opposed to a longer-term one. I hear what you guys are saying. I'm just not sure we throw out everything.
No. Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I don't disagree with you. I'm just stating my that devil's advocate, that a little bit of those concerns that are still out there that you have to recognize that's going to have a budgetary impact, and what is that going to mean going forward? But you were absolutely right. These are people that are already living below poverty. and some of them that have not been able to receive any assistance. I'm sorry, Supervisor Merkin. Some that just have not been able to receive assistance because they are just that little bit over the amount, or there are other reasons that do not allow them.
And one thing of increasing the general assistance a little bit here is that it's not available countywide as opposed to being something that one community asks for almost a general assistance type of thing and another community doesn't. This is consistent with going, is what he was really not, was really talking about was a general assistance.
Right.
So this does it in a way, systematic way. In a through a mechanism we already have, program we already have. So I can see it there, but I would just caution, or I'm just going to say, I think we need, if we do this, I think we need to do it and then hit pause.
Okay.
And say, let's not look at, you know, let's get more information about our own revenues before we go forward. Okay. Is there any more discussion?
No.
Anybody on the line want to give us any more feedback or from the staff? Do you have any other thoughts?
This is Carla. I don't have anything further. Neither does Aaron. Neither does Brett.
No.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Are we ready for a vote?
Yeah, Carrie McNall. She made the motion and we had discussion. I second, but
yeah. Olson?
Aye.
Kevin?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye.
Thank you.
So, Carla, thank you very much. Aaron, Brett, thank you all for the information. We'll look forward then to seeing whatever materials that we need to approve to effectuate this, hopefully July 1st. Right?
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Depending on no department reports, we're going to 18 other reports, and I know we have several people on the line who have been, I think we may still have patiently gone through all of this, or done other work while you were waiting for us to get to this item. It's discussion and direction to staff regarding the request from the developer of Prairie Valley to amend the urban renewal area plan.
That's the first problem I'd like to talk about. This was listed incorrectly originally on the agenda. So I want to apologize to anyone who's called in today who really wants to talk about the specifics of Prairie Valley, also some people call Dotson Farms. That is not what's on the agenda at all today. What is on the agenda today is the overview discussion about amending our economic development policies for urban renewal areas and tax incremental financing policy to add third-party payments on select residential housing development. That is step one in what I believe we will have to be a somewhat long process here. But this needs to be decided by the board first, is do we even want to move forward to look at what that a program might look like, a general program.
Okay, and I apologize if I was reading from the agenda that was placed in the packet and I did not get the agenda.
We understand. Like I said, there was confusion. We all work at
I'll read it again.
All right.
What we are looking at is discussion and consideration of amending the economic development policies for urban renewal areas and tax increment policy to add third-party payments on select residential housing development. And this was put on the agenda by Supervisor Olson, so I'll let her discuss it.
Sure. Okay, so I'm going to go back to when I came to Story County in 2002, and the discussion about low and moderate income, especially low income, was on a lot of people's minds. How are we going to go ahead and pay for low income housing? What do? We have shortages. As we progressed 18 years later as a county, we've had various different discussions and needs related to housing. And in the last couple years, the housing discussion was expanded into a shortage of what would be called starter or young family housing, in addition to the housing still being unaffordable for many of our lower income wage earners. As I've looked at housing over the time, et cetera, you look at different ways that communities are providing more of the low and moderate income, it always seems to come down to money. Not that there aren't other issues out there that need to be addressed, and government can't solve everything, so I understand that. But this is a situation where, because housing is expensive to put up or subsidize, all of those things. So I want to say it was 8 months ago, but I don't remember exactly. I had my first conversation with a developer, and I believe I had it actually with two. I mean, I met with a few developers about what can we do about getting low and moderate income housing throughout the county, and secondarily, how can we create housing growth in the east part of the county. So there are two different views there, or whatever, and we know that several of our outlying communities in the county, especially those that are east of I-35, with the exception of Nevada, have struggled with doing some housing. And yet we know there are low-income people who are lying in those areas also, and the cost of housing is one of the reasons that they're attractive. So this is all put together, and so having a discussion about how could we find money and what avenues were available to us to solve the county's housing problem. In my past life as a journalist, I've written about TIF and urban renewal for a long time. I sat on a study with the League of Women Voters of Iowa. I was one of the people who studied urban renewal and tax incremental financing. And I also covered the Board of Supervisors of Story County for a long time. And when the Board of Supervisors brought up the fact that they wanted to implement urban renewal areas and tax incremental financing, they looked at starting, okay, with the wind turbines. And there were a lot of counties in Iowa that did that. And the reaction from those townships that were going to be impacted by the implementation of TIF on the wind turbines, those would be primarily Lincoln and I believe Warren townships, they were very, very concerned, vocalizing some of the same concerns I suspect we're going to hear later today as we get into this discussion. And that is, don't take our money from one part of the county and move it to another part of the county. And so the policy that the supervisors came up with at that particular time limited what kind of projects could basically be funded going forward. Although they did do a private, they did a road for to benefit one implement dealer. There was also a lake done, and there was a bike path done for the city of Nevada. The next project, of course, was Tedesco Learning Quarter, and that one was $4 million from the northeast part of the county down into literally the city limits of Ames. I point that out to say that really, if there's any quote-unquote precedent here, it is about all of a sudden looking at where one of our growth areas are, which is on the west part of our county, there is residential housing growth still. And it's housing growth that's not, for the most part, at least around Ames, occurring in what even could be considered the starter housing category. So the proposal I brought forward today, and I kind of let you give insight and told you in December I thought I'd be bringing it at some point, is that looking at taking our policy and saying can we add third-party payments? And I put in on select residential housing development because I think it will be a very case-by-case situation if developers are interested in having participation in this. And from our standpoint, if we can see that there are revenues that can be deflected from or taken, if you will, okay? So I direct you to the suggested structure of the tax incremental financing handout or attachment there. And I'm opening it on my computer right now. Sorry, my computer must be a little obstinate. All right. So it is modeled directly off of what currently and was set up by the board originally. Okay. As we all know, there is a base amount that is set before you ever apply tax incremental financing to any piece of property. That's as it is today. This, so in most cases for developers, this will be vacant land. But it could be a situation where someone is going to do rehab on that. Now, also covered under that base amount is not eligible for the county to look at taking under TIF any kind of debt levy. So if you borrow for a school, if you borrow for a fire station, et cetera, or the PEPL levy for schools, et cetera, those are all taken out prior to the TIF calculations moving forward. The next thing that the county board did that is still we have as our policy today is that of that incremental amount remaining, 50% is not taken for county policy. This allows for growth still with the other taxing authorities. We're not taking all of the revenue. We're taking just 50% of the revenue for what is should be perceived of as a county-wide good. If you conceive of improvements and addition of housing, especially low and moderate income housing, as a benefit to the county. What's different than what has happened before is we do have third parties involved. And that's where the 5 to 7% that would go to the developer could occur. In this particular situation, there are times, and this would be select by individual development, where the developer might be doing something in particular, looking at particular standards that reinforce some of our stormwater drainage or some of our priorities going forward that may cost a little additional. And so there might be an incentive to have someone build, especially if they're not building large housing that I know I couldn't afford or would choose not to afford. So at the top, what's left over? About 43 to 45% for low to moderate income housing. It would be done elsewhere in Story County, done, and it could be non-government recipients. It could be a nonprofit who would be getting some of the money, and then that would go in the urban renewal area. It could be going to a development that is struggling somewhere else. But this is based, once again, upon the premise that we have struggled for a long time with a housing problem, and we need to find out ways to fix it.
That's what
yes.
I
yes.
It could be non-government entities, you said it could be a non-profit, or it could be a struggling development. So that would be additional money that you would say would go to a developer.
It most likely how I'm envisioning it in my mind, but I want to make it very clear. I'm laying the groundwork with something that actually will likely not ever come to fruition until I'm off the board. Okay, depending on how long, I mean, I'm going to go back to we do have a developer who's interested in this, but I don't know how long that's going to take for staff to develop a plan if we went down that road. I'm trying to lay the groundwork for what I believe is an important way for Story County as it moves forward in its growth and its needs to provide housing for the levels that we're having difficulty with. So that, too, it most likely would be maybe government if they were going to help maybe run infrastructure or sewer in that.
But your slices could be non-government.
Correct. So a non-profit, ANWIM, is a non-profit. ERP is a non-profit.
Are you talking about only non-profit?
No, I am also talking about there's a possibility that it might be, depending on a future board, there could be a situation where a developer working with a community who's sitting outside, a city limits is going to be annexed in, who might. There's nothing in what I'm asking for that we really truly consider that says we have to do that. That we actually select. It would be case by case.
Okay, but case by case, to me, after making case by case, you still got to have some criteria or guidelines.
Yes.
Or it's just whatever.
Which,
that's why I'm asking. Because your second item says private parties, nonprofit, and DJM4 private. I think you
mean. Oh, private. Sorry, that is a title. Sure. Thank you. I apologize for that title. So, yeah, so that will be today of the decision really coming out of this is do we want to direct staff to begin what could be a long process, certainly a detailed process, to say what does this really look like? From a legal standpoint, when you're talking about the county moving money to possibly even incorporated and unincorporated areas. Now, we have done that before because what have we done? We've taken some of those TIF money and we put it within municipal boundaries, if I understand that correctly. And that's been looking at our legal counsel because that's one of the things that has to be looked at entirely under what conditions. The staff would need to say how does this in fact, how would this work? What input would there need from the municipalities, from the townships that may be impacted? The county's been through this initial input, if you will, once before, back to with the wind turbines in the northeast part. Colonesco, some of the people who sat on the Colonesco board, school board at the time, were very vocal about this. The townships. At our last township meeting was in March, before COVID came, okay. One of the Warren County township trustees said to me somewhat, I don't know, with a little bit tongue-in-cheek is the way I'm going to put it, is when we were talking about the cost of radios and, you know, their new radio system, he said, can I have some of our wind turbine money back? And that's what, we're in year 7 or 8 or something like that, of that. So this is an idea that needs to be embraced as far as the first step, and then it will be up for the staff to look at. The other thing would be is how is this going to be implemented. Residential housing gets built, especially, you know, in some developments much more slowly on an individual system. So the assessor will be involved, and our auditor's office will need to be involved in how exactly will this money be taken, and then how does it get transferred into an award of housing. Today is just the first step. It is the concept about for us to truly facilitate money, okay, to go toward housing in its broadest definition about low and moderate income is to add third-party developers. There is another option that leaves the developer out of it and can model what is being done with the wind turbines right now, which is what our current policy is. We've added housing, but then it would only go to nonprofits or government entities. Or then you could say only government entities. We'd only be handing it out to communities themselves to turn around and create low-income housing. So then I have to the right of this slide our key points from the sample municipal agreement. Kurt Friedrich did provide to me a copy of the agreement he had with Nevada and has had for 5 or 6 years now. And I just made some notes here about that we can do this. Nevada is doing it. It at least seems to be easier for people to be able to wrap their mind around the fact about what is when a municipality, but then Nevada is having to figure out how they're applying that for low and moderate income, because Indian Ridge isn't probably qualifying for it. So that is where we are today, is the discussion about being able to use TIF and urban renewal area to facilitate what is an immediate need in some ways, but long-term need for the county to look at providing the housing it needs and is going to continue to need as a growing county. Thank you for the time. We do have people on the phone that want to speak, if they're still here. There you go. Okay, and a couple of them, if they're off.
Can we have people speak first and then ask questions?
Yeah, that'd be fine. Okay, and so if they're still not on the line, I've got a couple of their questions here, okay?
We apologize. This was on the agenda at the time, and it normally would have been put on the agenda. It wasn't intentional to keep people on the phone for so long. Is Art Cleaner still on the phone? Star 6?
I'm still here.
Okay, Art Cleaner, FLEENER. That's for our secretary. Good afternoon, Art. Thank you for hanging in.
Good afternoon.
Would you want to address this?
Yes, thank you. Thank you for your time and consideration. Good afternoon, Art. As Linda stated, my name is Art Cleaner. I'm the president of the Gilbert Fire Department in Gilbert, Iowa. Our department services Franklin Township and the city of Gilbert. We have a concern of, and Morris, I appreciate your explanation of what you're looking at today. We still have a concern of taking tax dollars that are earmarked for certain things for the township and taking those monies at whatever percentage, 50%, and redistributing those to other portions of the county. I realize that low-income housing may be an issue for Stewart County, but solving the county's problems does not start by taking money for essential services from one part of the county and shift them to another part of the county. Every dollar that we have for the fire department has a spot to go to. We have $0 in our budget this current fiscal period starting July 1st for purchasing of anything other than the essential equipment that we needed, and that's partly due to the radio purchases. We spent $90,000 on new radios. So our costs continue to go up. Our number of residents is growing. Our tax base is growing. But with that also comes additional expenses for making sure that our members have the training, the equipment, and we provide the service to our residents. Thank you.
Thanks, Art. Any questions, Bart?
No.
Now we'll move on to Kurt Friedrich. Kurt, are you on the line? Star 6.
If he's not, I have something to read from.
Hello, this is Kurt.
Hi, Kurt. This is Linda. Go ahead.
Hi, Linda. Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
You're good.
Thank you. Thank you, supervisors, for taking up this topic, and reflecting back on the last item on the agenda, there was a discussion about economic constraints to various things and uncertain economic outlook. Wouldn't it be a cool thing that here during Economic Development Week that the supervisors would choose to do something to stimulate the economy here in Story County? And as I've looked at this economic development process and policy statement that the county has and reviewed some of the important tenets of this statement, number one, goals to the goals of this urban renewal area or identifying areas as urban renewal. And it says TIF assistance in Story County will be used to enhance the taxpayers' enjoyment of the county and or to increase the taxable valuation of land in Story County. And then further, there are eligibility requirements that the projects must meet that I think also are integral to identifying these select projects that would qualify. And I'll read some of them. One is transportation infrastructure enhancements, public land and trail improvement, communication and utility infrastructure expansion, and housing development, rehabilitation, and or conversion. So I think that goes to when there's an opportunity for the county to support projects that have potentially greater costs because of what is being delivered in that project, and a greater good that will benefit folks in Story County, wouldn't it make sense to support those kinds of projects and see more of those types of projects in the county? And presently, the statement further restricts partnership, if you will, between public and private entities. Item number 4 on the statement says Story County will not use TIF funds to participate in any direct disbursement or rebate to a private entity. And so that goes to the crux of what I'd like to suggest, and I hope that the supervisors will consider, and that is an amendment to this policy statement that would change that to say that Story County will allow TIF funds to be utilized in disbursement or rebate to private entities as well. This just expands the current policy to allow partnership, if you will, again, with private entities, and expand the opportunity to create more exciting projects in the county. Thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you, Kurt. We'll go next to Ruth Johnson.
Find out if he is still on the line, please.
Ruth Johnson, if you're still on the line, would you please hit star?
Okay. If he's not, I will read it. If he's not, okay. Oh, all right. So here is what he said to me. I support amending the county TIF policy as it relates to private entities. Now more than ever, we need thoughtful economic activity to occur in our county. Expanding the tax base creates a sustainable funding source for many public benefits. Schools, parks, social services, and the like. Thank you, Luke Jensen, Franklin Township. So now, I just did give you a note about who I thought was number 4, and instead, actually, it is Frank Riddle.
Is Frank Riddle still on the line? Frank, if you're still on the line, could you hit star 6?
And if not, I have a question for you.
Would you read his questions then?
Certainly. I am opposed to the residential TIF district for the Dodson Farm. Next comment. How long in years will the TIF remain open? How long will the developer receive the 5-7%? Frank notes that he is a Gilbert City Council member and a board member of the Gilbert Franklin Fire Board. The TIF document that I received is very vague. I think I addressed staff about how none of that is fleshed out yet. We're not discussing a particular project.
Questions were, how long would the TIF remain open, and how long would the developer get the percentage?
Correct.
Okay, those are good questions.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, then, Sonia Dodd, are you still with us?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Thank you. So I'm Sonia Dunn, City Clerk in Gilbert, and I have a question about the LMI housing portion of 43% to 45% you have listed. Would an individual be able to apply for that LMI housing portion to build a single home? And the reason I ask that is, instead of moving some of these TIF monies from one portion of the county to another portion of the county, there are a lot of our cities that have a single lot in an older part of town where an individual could build a small starter home on those lots, but a developer isn't going to come in and put in a $200,000, $300,000 home on those lots. So would an individual who qualified or meets the income guidelines for LMI be able to then apply for the house funding that way?
That's a great comment and question for legal and consultants to answer. I mean, that's a one that can be looked at definitely. I think it's great outside the regular box thinking.
Anything else to add to that, Sonia?
No, that was just an idea I had. So instead of transferring some of these money from maybe a certain township, we could try to keep it in the township.
Okay, so you're
thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you so much.
That's what I wanted. I thought I heard you say not transferring it someplace else.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I wanted to double check that. Thank you.
So the next one is just, I received from Doug Moore, but Doug is one of the Franklin Township trustees. I guess he's representing the trustees. He couldn't stay on anymore, so he asked that you read the letter.
I got that message. Well.
Okay, super.
Okay, May 4th, 2020, to Story County Iowa Board of Supervisors from Franklin Township Trustees. Reference, Story County TIF Modification Proposal. The Franklin Township Trustees strenuously object to any modification to the existing Story County TIF policy without extensive financial analysis and public comment. In particular, the divergence of TIF debt payment funds to out-of-municipality projects or private developers is unacceptable. Signed, Doug Moore, Art Cleaner, and Tom Hanks. I also did receive, and I think all the supervisors did, received something from Art Cleaner, from Chief Zignet, and from Kurt Friedrich, but they have all had an opportunity to speak, so I won't read the emails. They're pretty much the same material. So they did have an opportunity to speak. I won't stop. Is there anybody else who wants to speak on this issue? If so, please hit star 6.
Can you hear me? This is Lucy Martin.
Lucy, I can hear you.
Okay. So I just have two quick comments, hopefully. First of all, I think it is a bad idea for the board to be considering removing such a nice bright line in your urban renewal policy. I think that really opens the floodgates. You might have one or two things in mind, but this opens the door for everybody who has an idea about how to use your limited TIF dollars, and you know that also leads to a great deal of staff time. That's not my main concern, but I think that's a nice bright line that was created in the policy that, honestly, I find it sort of unbelievable that you're even considering it right now. I don't think it should be under consideration in any case, but especially when we're talking about COVID-19, every other discussion I hear is let's wait and see. There's going to be huge economic impact. All this money is coming from the same place, and that's property tax dollars. So when you're hearing from the small communities that they're worried, and you're hearing about you yourself are worried about what's happening in the county, that's all the same source. And then I would say there's a when you're talking about residential for TIF, and I do have 16 years of experience in Story County with TIF, plus 25 years experience with housing and economic development, so I'm not just talking out of nowhere right now. And that's that residential property, the rollback is applied only to the base. So you actually erode that, the TIF portion or the increment portion is held harmless from that. The math on that is not as straightforward as you might think. I think other people have asked about analysis, so I would include that in my comments. I'm happy to show you what residential TIFs do to the base of a tax district. Yes, counties have the same ability to TIF as cities do, but they are not similar entities. Like, cities have a lot more, they are a very concise geographic area. They have infrastructure like sewers and water in place. So even though the code gives counties the same abilities as cities, they're very different entities. You're not annexing into more space like cities do. That's it. I'll stop now. Thanks.
Thank you. Are there any other people on the line who would like to make any comments? I'll give it about 30 seconds here. So. Okay, we did lose a couple people, and I'm sorry for that, but I have a sense it may not be the first time or the last time that we talked about this, so there probably will be additional ways. And I would encourage anybody to additionally email all the supervisors, all three supervisors, if you have any thoughts you want to share with.
I will add that John Pop had been on when we first started our board meeting, and he went off. We were playing a little phone tag this morning, so he had another meeting to go to. The only thing that he just said is, if you move forward with anything, to make sure that you're going slowly. I don't know if he was going to try to get back on or not, but that was the only other little bit of information that
and
I had.
Mayor Pop called me this morning also and had some concerns. I was hoping he would be on the call to express them. I don't have any writing. I did also get a phone call from Steve Mahoney, a Gilbert resident.
I didn't do
a firefighter and been on the Gilbert Franklin fire, and he was very opposed to any residential tipping and anything that would take property tax money away from fire and rescue. And I think there's other people I've talked to, but I just don't have specifics about.
I would love to talk to some of the people, or here's my question and response. I started in the presentation by talking about this is not the first time people from townships and people from a community, I would say probably Ziri, McCall, Berg, and Colo, okay, who have said, don't take our money away from us, okay? So my questions will be to some of these people, because I understand there's concerns. As I said, I got approached by a township trustee 2 months ago about saying, I need that money, you know, for things like that. Where did they speak up when the supervisors first did it before and the policy was put in and it was Colodesco in that area under the gun? And my second question would be, I really would like to know, what is the difference between taking the revenues from the turbines and taking the revenues from the residences? I mean, you know, it's a full yield.
Okay, here's what people have said to me.
Mm-hmm.
Can I speak in here?
Who is this?
This is Dave Lisa, Chief Gilbert Fire.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm still here.
Great.
Turbines do not add load to a fire service or an EMS mm-hmm. service. We do not fight fires at wind turbines. There are not people living at wind turbines. Residential areas do create more load on an EMS and a fire service. I mean, people are living there, they're doing activities there. There's no There's no load added to the fire department or EMS service for a 300-foot, you know, piece of metal sticking up in the air. If they catch on fire, we are not to spray water on them because they make electricity. So literally all we do is we stand there and watch it burn and fall down and keep people off the road so they don't get, you know, hurt. When you add a subdivision, you are adding, you know, potential work that your emergency services are going to have to do and will do.
Okay.
That would be the difference.
Thank you.
And
thank you for that response.
The teacher was on earlier and said the same thing about school districts.
So, and once again, with the school district, and I will follow up with Lindsay on this, because one of the discussions that has happened here in the board room prior to me being on the board for several years has been there is one particular gentleman, Arden Greiner, who comes in and speaks quite regularly, and he was talking about, for several times, he spoke about the fact about we need that money for our school district. There had to be a discussion then exactly how do school districts get the money that they can go ahead and spend, and talking about allowable growth, but talking also the per pupil. So I'd like to get more information from Lindsay about where he feels how the load would increase, given that they get their per pupil and their backfill. But I appreciate both of the comments because I'd ask for what are the differences.
Okay. And I think, just to add a little bit there, because Lindsay did call me last night and talked with them. You're right, they do get per pupil funding, for example, from the state, but the state isn't even keeping up with their needs. But they are really in need of 4% or 6%, and they're getting either 0% or 1%.
Mm-hmm.
That's impacting what they're able to provide, and so they are still cutting services, reducing teachers, you know, reducing class, increasing class sizes, reducing some of the class options that they take because they don't have the funds available.
But the funds available, as in, because the legislature has only told them they could spend so much per pupil, not because there's any change in the revenue coming. I mean, you know, that someone else is taking away their revenue via their tax base.
The legislature only gives them so much per pupil. They
right.
don't cap what you can spend.
That's not how I understand it. But that's all I ask. I will ask for that. So thank you, and thank you about the comments about, you know, from the chief there about EMS. So it would be interesting if we decide to go forward with this process to take a look exactly at what the formula is about how much money needs to come into fire and EMS to compensate for each new home that gets built. You know,
what's the formula they get their money on now?
They get it on the tax base, right? So I'm wondering just what the cost. Each time a house comes on, what are the additional costs?
That's not how they're funded.
So please help me. I just don't, I'm not connecting with you.
Property taxes. They're not funded on a first service basis or first possible. They get a percentage, they get the property taxes on those. And that goes to the township trustee.
Yeah.
And they utilize that for the mandated fire protection they have to. So you're almost talking about setting up a new process for fighting fire.
No, I'm not. What I heard being said is that each residential unit that comes on adds load. Okay, and so I was accurate in understanding how the EMS and fire are funded. They're funded as a percentage of the property taxes. So I'm just wondering where at that point about how much it really costs every time a house comes on. I mean, does a house have to be a certain value? Because we all know that a $250,000 house is taxed at pays less taxes than does a $500,000 house. right? Okay, and then you do the rollback, et cetera. So it, then am I hearing that if the $250,000 house comes on, if not, it, does that pay for itself when it comes to an added load to the EMS and fire? Or is it the $500,000 house you need? I'm just asking that. Where's the load? And, yeah, go ahead, Ethan.
County Attorney Ethan Anderson is going to talk to us.
Yeah, if I may, it seems like we're getting lost in the weeds. I think the discussion came up, and listening to Lisa, or Lucy Martin, and some other people I've shared, and further discussion with the board, this is a time to go slow and be careful. Lucy referenced a helpful bright line at the philosophical level. Policy decision and not using public funds to benefit private projects. I think the advice of both will be careful is very, very prudent here. And I think what we're discussing what seems to be almost a complete overhaul of the TIF policy. We need more information. And the discussion here is getting sideways and going down a rabbit trail when the real philosophical debate needs to be happening. In my mind, in my opinion, would be to what extent we want to spend, does the board want to spend public dollars on private projects? That's the debate. That's the philosophical discussion. Because if you do away, as Lucy said, with the bright line rule, noticing that there's differences between municipalities and counties and how they operate and what they do, that's the discussion that should be taking place, is my opinion, my recommendation.
So as your legal advice, okay, because that's what I'm interested in from you, Ethan. Okay. You are advising legally that that would be a next step in the process for the board to evaluate what might be the issues to the county as opposed to a city one, or are you saying what would be just the issues in general?
Yeah, so 403 as a code section, I think was adopted in the 50s, 1956, 57, somewhere back there, and it primarily applied to municipalities. Then in 1996, the legislature said, no, it also applies to counties. They can do the same thing to municipalities. But again, as Lucy said,
all participants are muted.
They're apples and oranges. I mean, they're different entities. They're different things, and the way they operate is different. I mean, you have potential for a private development, hypothetically speaking, where you have a TIF out to be annexed into a city.
Yes.
And that would be, in my mind, a unforeseen nightmare scenario. I mean, that's a concern.
And that's one of the things, yes, I think we need
again,
to...
Legal advice is, you're correct, this is a policy decision for the board. To what extent do you want to do a complete overhaul of the TIF policy to permit private entities to be benefited by public funds?
Okay.
That, I think, is...
So, and I'm proposing it be for select residential housing only. So let me clarify, that's what's on the agenda, and that's my proposal. Not a complete overhaul of our entire TIF policy when it comes to funding other projects that we have put under. My proposal is related to housing.
My proposal is related to residential. I didn't see that any place.
So we added residential, we added housing as number four. So it's related to, as you're differentiating, is it to commercial housing?
No, tipping residential development. That's not housing development.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, I tried to make it very clear. I said I apologize earlier for how kind of the agenda got screwed up for a while there, but we got it fixed by 5 o'clock.
Okay, so you understand. Just to make clear, here's what I'm not understanding that. Does our urban renewal plan now say we cannot tip residential?
Yes. What it says is our urban renewal plan, we can't pay out to a third party, which is
both different things.
Okay, so who out there, so we TIF, and then so what is at
issue here is, one, paying a developer, okay, to help with the with an incentive to develop more in the rural areas, or the fringe areas, I guess I'm going to just call it, not just urban fringe, but all fringe. And then let's talk about other non-government entities. Let's talk about private developers who would be non-profit, like Anawin, like Mainstream, like Friendship Arc. I mean, those two specialize in a particular population, where Anawin is low-income housing for general population. Those are your distinctions, I think.
My question is whether we have to spend taxpayer money on doing research, legal research, whatever, here to decide to make a decision. And I'm not in favor of throwing a bunch of money away on questions until we can decide whether we're really interested in pursuing it.
Well, and I'm going to come back as we pay staff to do research, okay? So that's that taxpayer money. And I guess since I've covered the board since 2002, I have watched several ideas that were change-making that the staff had to do research on. Some of them got adopted and some of them did not. So are we in fact saying if we can't get a quick answer, then we don't want to do it at all? And then my second question would be, like I said, I came in 2002 and I heard people talk about low-income housing and how we're going to build it and whatever. And we're still here at 2020 and doing that. So where do you feel would be the logical place for the money to come from, if not from housing for people who are buying $450,000 houses?
Question. No, I mean, you've got some good questions. I'm struggling with that third-party private entity, that whole philosophical. That's where I'm having a struggle with. I'm also, just from the folks that have talked with me in the last 24 hours, of a concern of the impact to their community to another potential part in a different part of the county that is going to benefit.
I heard that when Colodesco, when it first came up, and you should have heard the conversations and the comments that came when the money was going to go to the Tedesco Learning Center.
And I heard that too, and I wasn't on the board yet, but I heard that, and I'm not sure that, I wasn't involved in that discussion, but the difference here that I'm seeing is when we're talking about Tiffin's residential development, and that's what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You have property owners who will be paying 100% of the property taxes that they are due. But then the fire agency or the school that is going to protect them is going to come when there's an emergency call. Fire agency, the school that's going to, educate their children they're getting a service load, but they're not getting the taxes they normally would get to do that. And according to our most recent FY20 tax act, 46.3% of property taxes went to the schools.
Okay.
So the state aid doesn't become anywhere near being, it for what schools need to educate a child.
We have tax aid, but she can't unmute.
Oh dear, okay.
Some people have been having trouble with that.
She wants me to say that the policies are where project funding goes. We need to also consider amendments to code of ordinances with property. It's a combo of both. Not just rewriting policy, but policy and ordinance.
Great. Okay.
And that's why the advice, I don't know who it was, the mayor that said, to be careful and go slow. I've discussed with the auditor concerns about under 15A, can we do rebate?
Okay.
So there's a lot unknown here. And
So for me, Ethan, I agree. I said before, slowly, I endorse that. There's lots of research to do. Okay, so back to, and I think I said this last meeting we had last Friday, between the chicken and the egg. So do we throw out what may be a good, viable alternative from a couple of viewpoints because we aren't going to do the research? So I agree that there needs to be research done, and that does fall to the staff. This is not a short process. I understand that. So that's why the discussion today is focused on, do we want to direct staff to move forward to look at it? That's not an approval, we're going to do it. It's do you want to direct staff? And I feel that this could be one of the long-term important things that we ask staff to work on.
Well, again, I mean, it's not a legal opinion, it's just a practical opinion. I'll offer it for what it's worth. You would still arrive at a position where you have to decide, as a board, do you want to change the philosophy to make public money available for pilot projects? That's the question you would arrive at.
So, okay.
Or a rebate for any other type of developmental assistance.
So, am I hearing, Lisa and Linda, am I hearing from you that you're not interested in making it available even to nonprofits, like in the future ERP, or our locals who want to build, or Adam who's looking at building over, affordable housing over within Ames, and or two people, I like Sonia's idea about, you know, put some, that money that was spent on infill lots. Are you saying that you would not turn it over to a nonprofit to do that? So that's a private party, not a developer, but a private party.
I guess in some respects I can struggle on that as well, and I understand it. My question is, if you're open the door for one, are you open the broader door? And that I don't know. We've got our attorney here of how narrow can you do something? So
the slippery slope.
And I would also offer that those projects, nothing would prevent them from partnering with the city to do this, as they did with today.
This land, what we're talking about is the land, though, that rests outside, in unincorporated area.
And again, yes, for the Dotson Farm and Prairie, but that could be annexed by the city of Ames.
Not any, or Gilbert, look at where it is. I'm going to go back to the definition of select, why I use the word select here, is I did take a look. Now, that potential project that the developers asked for, this conversation, though, is not focused on that. But I did, in choosing the word select, realize that there will be some subdivisions that will not be annexed in our lifetime, whether they're south of Story City, they're north of Gilbert, they're, you know, because of the rules about not creating the islands and all of that. There are some that are a long, long way out. The TIF period would be long, even if we went for the 20 maximum that's allowed under the law, and I'm not saying that's what I'm advocating, okay? So select really is looking at there may be some options and opportunities. And boy, I like what Sonia was just thinking. Can we do that on a countywide basis with the municipalities? There are lots of questions. Yeah.
Even though you're talking about a revision of our urban renewal plan that you say is not tied to infill development, I think the reality is that it was brought up, the issue was brought up regarding one development.
The tiniest touch on that, but this is...
Well, I'm saying we received a proposal from via email, all three of us did, from the developer on the Johnson Farms project, and asked that we consider this. So what you're talking about is it's very seldom that there's anything that can be kept in the unincorporated areas other than wind farms are residential developments, so we're looking at residential. I find the argument about the services, and that, I mean, that's the thing that I thought of the first time when I heard residential. I thought, my goodness, the property taxes, I mean, the schools, the fire agencies, and what that's going to do. And that's why I looked up, you know, what percentage of the property tax is collected in Story County, but it's schools.
Mm-hmm.
33%, whatever it was. Just, you know, I just feel like once you start doing that, where does it end? Everybody wants everything tipped for various things, and I just feel like we would be opening up a true can of worms. I know you're going to say, you know, well, how else would you fund low and moderate income housing? I know that's what you said. And we're doing a housing study right now. That's
yes.
One of the issues that we ask people
yes.
to talk about, yes. is what were the good investments, what communities were appropriate for various things, what might be a good investment, what might be a good way for the county to be involved. I honestly would like to see that housing study.
So
in relation to this, because you're only bringing this up in terms of housing, you're not bringing it up in general.
Okay. So there comes some point where opportunity is presented in front of you. Now I go, once again, we're not discussing Dodson and Farms or whatever today, okay? But yes. I want to point out again that what we're talking about now, we don't even know if we can do it as a legal, you know, and how would that look and structure? A long process, right? Okay? He's got, and going back to Dodson Farms, the opportunity that we're looking at now, is my understanding there won't be really real groundbreaking until the final plat isn't due until October, okay? So this is a long term, a long journey for everyone. Coming then to the housing study, which is supposed to be to us probably now October, they're thinking, right, okay? So definitely, I think that this now is the time we have an opportunity to start the discussion of the process now about looking to what we need to even know for most likely maybe a different board even. To make that final determination here, because the housing study, if it's delayed too much longer, I'll be gone. I mean, you know, okay. I think that taking some time to look at this and letting everybody weigh in, take this process about what are we going to do and move it forward so that when the housing study is done and when the developer is actually looking at starting to break ground and do some lots there, that this county knows whether it wants to do that or not. The slippery slope thing, which is, I think, what you're talking about, are we opening the door? I believe, at least I know, two of us have given responses to a slippery slope argument related to confinement operations. So we always need to be careful about, you know, saying this will lead to that. Will this open the door? I don't know. I don't have a crystal ball, but this is very specific and I feel narrow. I don't think we're rewriting the policy as we're taking a look at very specific, narrow for both the use of it, like Leanne's saying, and where the revenues come from the beginning. Okay? So, yeah, and once again, I think it's worth the staff to spend the time on it so that if, in fact, we get to the end of the process of looking at this, or another board does this and says, you know, this is how we need to solve our problem, we've done the work.
I do think we want to have alternatives for housing. I don't disagree on that. I do look at kind of the timing, and some of it that just can be just coincidental when things kind of come together. I do wonder on
how potentially narrow you can get it. I think anything's open to interpretation on there. And I do think we do have a housing study out there. That was one of the questions I remember asking them, is will they come with recommendations to us of how to do some funding? They may come back and say this is an avenue to look at. They may come back with a whole different analysis of what to do. I think for me, it still comes down to, I think, Ethan, you said it great, was that philosophical debate on do you use public funds to benefit private interests? And that's where I'm having that bit of a struggle on in that. I've read through all of this. I was reading code. I was reading our ordinance, everything, since I knew this was going to be coming up on our agenda. I know when this was adopted, on 2012, this has not changed since 2012.
Mm-hmm.
On there.
It's just a sample.
Right. No, but I know this has not, our policies and our process and policies has not changed since 2012. I don't know what was before that. We don't have any archives on our, at least I can't find archives of anything prior, of anything else earlier. Things have been working well as we've had it set out. Developments have continued. I understand where you're trying to go with the low and moderate income housing, but
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
If your concern is that money be made available to low and moderate income housing, why did you put in the 5 to 7% for the development?
So that was just taking that sample kind of thing, seeing what the percentage was that had to go to LMI and putting that in there in case the developer needed an incentive for something special.
But that's not for the LMI, that's for the...
No, but I mean, I took back what was available when I did all the you don't have to do it. It's an incentive to maybe to get a developer to move
to get a development of any kind, not a low and moderate income of any kind.
I think what you're asking me is to get a development of any kind. The realities are, I believe, if you go out and talk to like Maxwell and how many times they've had that developer start and stop. I believe Cole has been discussing development with a couple of other people, and the cost involved of developing in Colo, and how much money is it going to cost for infrastructure, and how much then do the lots need to sell for? So my point is that if there's an incentive to get that housing going, if it's low and moderate income, or if it is the market rate, but that part of that tax to be used to do low and moderate income somewhere else. I'm back to that. I love Linda's idea about the infill project.
Okay, but what I'm saying is the 5 to 7% can be going to the developer who is doing the housing development that is being tipped, whether or not it's low and moderate income.
Oh, yes, correct.
Why is the developer getting 5 to 7% if they're going to do that anyway?
Got it. If they're going to go ahead and do that development anyway. That's your question. Thank you.
Yes.
Okay.
So, because I'm hearing your concern being, well, we give money to low and moderate income,
mm-hmm.
and that's what's confusing me.
Trying to do an incentive. That's all I'm trying to do. So, if that's not something for you, if you're not interested in that, and I hear that that's a real problem, then we don't have to do that. I'd still then like to discuss then about the money that would be used to go for low and moderate income, about that, the likelihood that it may go to a private third party. And I'm going to give you an example of, I don't think we think of as a developer, but there is a gentleman in Cambridge who bought the old school there. And he has done, I believe, 4 apartments in it, and there's 4 more left to do. But, and in fact, Ethan, if you remember when you and I and Brenda and Deb Shildroth, were all working on my proposed experimental funding program, okay, Brenda talked about this particular gentleman. He's not a developer so much as that he just bought the school and he wanted to convert into some affordable housing unit, okay? And so, in this particular situation, let's say we took the money from a higher growth hot area like the urban fringe of Ames that's not going to get annexed anytime soon, and we moved it over so we could lend him or give a grant or whatever it looked like to help him complete those other 4 units in Cambridge. That's a private party. Okay. I mentioned Annalyn before. I mentioned Main Street and Mainstream and Friendship Arc. And what did we just do, talking about using public money for private entities? That's what the Story County Housing Trust Fund did. In giving those 2 grants of $37,000 each to help them complete their 2 residential houses, it gave public money. In this particular case, some of it, if you want percentage-wise, some came from the City of Ames, some came from Story County, and then a whole lot came from IFA. That's exactly the same thing, and maybe that's why I'm not understanding quite about why it wouldn't go to some private entities, because we all talked about that, and you guys indicated you were in support of me voting for that when I went over to the Story County Housing Trust Fund Board.
Okay, we've been talking about this for an hour, mm-hmm. and it's an important topic, and we were able to let people have feedback, and I think that's good. Let's go back to our agenda and read specifically what is being considered today. I've not done a very good job here, okay, of keeping us on track. So let me get my agenda up again and read what's on the correct agenda. Discussion and consideration of amending the economic development policies for urban renewal areas and tax increment policy to add 30 third-party payments on select residential housing development. Okay.
I would make a motion. Let's see where it goes. I move that we direct staff to look at the issues involved from a legal, time, and administrative perspective to produce a report back to the Board of Supervisors about amending the economic development policies for urban renewal areas and tax incremental policy to add third-party payments on select residential housing development. Take a breath.
So the part that you added before amending the language that's in our agenda item, could you read that again slowly?
Well, I can say it again. Okay.
Wait, let's second it or not second it, and then go back to maybe a new one. Can we do that?
Okay. The second to the motion, maybe supervisor.
Which is basically a direction to staff to start to look into this.
I'm reading that motion to myself for my second.
Okay.
Are there any other motions?
I don't have a motion, just a comment. I mean, I really want to, I want to have that information from that housing study and some of the recommendations there. We put money towards that,
That was a big push by you, Loris, which I think was a great thing to do. I want to see the broader picture of recommendations, because for me, that may, it may change at a later date what my, what I might consider here, to say, okay, this is a direction that we need to look at more, or it may say, okay, we need to, there are other information from that housing study that we need to have. So I prefer, I get what you're saying of wanting to get something started. I would just prefer to wait. I need something to read concrete in front of me of looking at that housing study and then say, okay, this is a step to move forward that we do. I know it may prolong things, and that's a hard thing to do. I just think we set one thing in process already, and we're kind of jumping ahead of that till I have that that bit of information. That's just kind of where I'm at this particular time.
I have nothing else to add right now because I've given my thoughts on the issue. So we have spent quite a bit of time. It was a good discussion. I know it's not a discussion probably over, and I think the housing study may help us with some specificity. Let's go on to update on current and near-term needs of unhomed and at-risk of homelessness for county residents. There's no documentation for Loris. I assume you have some.
Yeah, I just asked for this to be put on in case there was any more follow-up from some of the groups that are looking at the issues of homelessness right now, especially as it comes to do with COVID. So I'm going to ask if Carla's still on and if Sandra's still on. Did either of you receive any communication from anyone about needs beyond what was discussed last week?
Carla or Sandra, if you're on, could you please unmute yourself and respond to Laura's question?
Okay. So I've heard nothing more, but I did have a telephone call with Jan Flora, and he just expanded a little bit about maybe something that the county could do related to bathrooms and clean washing facilities, okay? And I had mentioned to him before what we had discussed about, you know, why don't you talk to the city of Ames and, you know, maybe we could work something out if we're asked to pay for a little bit of it. His comment was actually they were needed in the unincorporated areas. So at which point I said, then Jan, I'm going to ask you with Amos, as Amos is very interested in this, to go communicate with Jody Stumbo and ERP some more to determine where exactly would we put washing statement, washing station or bathroom station in an unincorporated area.
Are you thinking about smaller communities? Like
no, he was actually talking about somebody down by the river. And my comment to him was that also we don't have staff really at this point to investigate that, but I'm sure if you called some of the sanitary companies that could do that to find out what their rules are about putting them out in the middle of somebody's cornfield. So that's where we left it, okay? So if he wants to develop that idea further into something that looks like it's feasible, I invited him at that point to come back and talk to us, okay? So that's the only thing I heard was a flesh out of that. And if nobody else has any more ideas, then I think we're done with this agenda item.
Yeah, I don't know when parks and stuff that have, you know, shelters or with restrooms, when those are all opening. I know a number of them were closed or still
right.
Closed. And I know that's generally in a town or just outside the main, that might address some of it. I'm just trying to figure out, you know, a private property, you know, farmland private property having.
And I told him, you know,
I just don't know how that would fit. Oh, I don't think there's Sandra. She couldn't.
Hey, hi.
She couldn't even get in.
Okay, yeah.
I have an answer.
You have an answer? Okay, okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
I would say that since you guys got a copy of the email, I made sure it went to ERP, I made sure it went to Jan with and Amos. So I feel that we've done a pretty good, thorough reach out at this point that we could.
Did Jan send an email?
No, I sent it to him. So the copy of what I sent to ERP saying, hey, we're going to have this on the agenda, so if there's something that you think that needs to be provided right away, let us know. So I consider we've done our real due diligence at this point. So.
Thank you very much.
I'm going to take the assumption, Madam Chair, that since Sandra walked in here, that she probably wasn't able to unmute. And maybe we should follow up with her afterwards just to make sure.
It's been inconsistent.
Right, right.
And no one was able to unmute. At one point, about 2 minutes later, she was.
Leanne wasn't able to.
And
I've already sent an email to
Kyle. But somehow, I don't know what she did.
So I just wanted to acknowledge that. That was my assumption.
Yeah.
That's why she walked in versus...
Okay. Yeah. And I also noticed I got a phone call on my cell phone which I didn't take.
I did too. I did too.
Okay,
wait a minute. Carla has just texted me. Okay.
All participants are unmuted.
This is Carla. Can you hear me?
I just unmuted.
Yep.
So everybody's unmuted right now. Yes.
Okay. I had just a follow-up. I had reached out to Jumbo in London at ERP. I asked them a couple of questions, but on the question that was raised last Friday by Jan in the how individuals who are unsheltered do not have a mailing address, how they could potentially receive the stimulus money. And it does sound like ERP would have staff available to work with folks if they are in need of trying to figure that out. They haven't, I don't think they at this time they've had anyone request assistance with that. They are going to be discussing the possibility of folks using the ERP mailing address. I think that's something that they have done in the past. For individuals, but they're reassessing that to see if that's anything that they can continue to do. Also then inquired about options for unsheltered individuals to meet their needs as far as cleaning up and bathing, those kinds of things. And Linda Munden had shared with me that she shared some information from the CDC website regarding individuals who are homeless and sleeping outside, that it advises municipalities against clearing camps during the COVID-19 crisis. And my understanding is ERP and NCDPD have still been going out and they have not found any encampments. So the guidelines don't necessarily apply to that. Linda had some thoughts about potentially setting up access to options for folks to be able to bathe and clean themselves. But I think those options would probably need to be fleshed out more, and the other entities in that would need to be contacted and things explored. But she did suggest a couple of ideas that she have on that. So that's the update that I have.
So is Linda working with Jan? Or is her in general working with Jan? Flora?
I'm not sure if ERP has been in contact with Jan, but I can certainly follow back up and suggest that maybe that'd be a partnership there.
I think maybe that's the connection that needs to be made, because ERP has staff are the experts of the homeless. Amos folks are concerned and want to help, and I think hooking those two groups up or asking them to work together and come up with something that's viable solutions would make more sense.
And I've had a couple.
I'm trying to do it here at the board table.
Okay. Sorry, Linda. Yep, I've had a couple different people from Amos contact me on this particular issue. So it's not just Jan. I've also had Cynthia, who has reached out to me. So, yeah, it's just making sure who's talking to whom.
So I'd like to let you know that my conversation with Jan Flora on Friday afternoon, he said that he was going to follow up with Jody Stumbo, so maybe it's, yeah, okay, about the stimulus check mail thing. So, general delivery.
Yep. So maybe you could encourage Jody to ask if there's some, if he has some other concerns that maybe they can work together. If it's something he's going to do.
Yeah.
I think that would feel really much better if they could get together and come up with the proposal. Thank you. Sorry, I had trouble unmuting. That proved to be not quite as good a solution as I thought it would.
That's okay. No worries.
I don't know why. Some people can unmute, some people can't. I don't know if some people are, what kind of phone some people are using, but we'll figure it out in a couple of years.
Okay. Good. Thank you.
Upcoming agenda items. Let's just limit this. Sometimes we get into thinking about talking about every single thing that we know is going to be on the agenda that somebody's putting on it. Let's just limit things that we need to get on agendas that somebody's not already working on. And I'm also looking at time right now. Is there anything we need to talk about? Or
I don't have anything to going on the agenda, or at least on Friday's agenda.
Okay, public forum number two. Comments from the public on items not on this agenda, and the phone is far unmuted, I think. Still. So if anybody has something they would like to mention, we can't take action today on it because we'll be meeting tomorrow, but maybe still in the future. Any public comments?
None on via the text.
Okay, then I'll close public forum number two. Liaison assignments, committee meeting updates, and announcements from the supervisors. Again, it's a quarter of two, and we still have another agenda item. So unless it's something really urgent, maybe we should just skip this.
Yeah, I don't.
Okay. Now the next item 22 is a closed session pursuant to Iowa Closed Session 21.51C. And Ethan Anderson is impatiently waiting, and Jerry Moore. Are you in the building by chance? Jerry Moore on the call.
I am on the call. I'm in the building.
Okay. Would you be willing to meet us in person for a closed session?
I sure can.
Okay. I'll work on getting us. Could you see if the assessor's conference room on the first floor is available?
Hey.
Downstairs,
the assessor's one.
Do you have a, I'm just thinking if we have one out of six people, we'd be better off in the assessor's conference room.
Don't think you might already be set up there.
Maybe could we just do it here, shut the door, and
move the door down.
Well, no, but Lucy, are you here?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Are you in conference room A?
We can be there. We can also just be in the boardroom. I think that's
Why don't you and Jerry come to the boardroom and I'll close out. We'll have a motion. Okay, we'll see you there. Okay, I would entertain a motion to go to closed session pursuant to Iowa Closed Session 21.51C.
So moved.
Second.
Seven. Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Merkin. Aye. We're in closed session.
I need to use them.
This service is provided by freeconferencecall.com. Please enter your access code followed by the pound or hash sign. You entered 8957 91. If this is correct, press 1. You are the only participant in the conference.
The same music all the time. We just play that one song over and over.
Whoever comes on, you won't be able to hear us. But I don't know what to do about that. Okay, good afternoon. It is 2:10 p.m. on May 5th, 2020, and this is Story County Board of Supervisors returning to open session. We are at Agenda item 23, discussion and consideration of Peter Villan's request for additional time beyond August 2020 to comply with the court order to remove the extra mobile homes at the Hickory Grove Mobile Home Park. The board is here. We have Assistant County Attorney Ethan Anderson, and we have Planning and Development Director Jerry Moore. Ethan, would you like to address this?
Yes, thank you. So this request comes before the board from Peter Gillen. This is a result of litigation that was the judge's order entered last year, last August, to have him remove the traders in August 2020. I think at this time, the recommendation from the county attorney's office would be this request for extension is premature. There's still 4 months before August 2020 for him to remove the trailers. I think if he comes back at a later time requesting additional time, he can give us more context on why he would need that additional time if it's appropriate. So I would recommend the board deny his request for an extension at this time. The reason we discussed the closed session and the reasons.
Thank you, Ethan. Jerry, do you have anything to add?
I don't have anything else said.
Okay. Supervisors, any questions, discussion? Okay. Not that I'll entertain a motion.
And it's my turn. I move that we deny Peter Gillen's request to extend the date by which he needs to have his trailer count down to 34 trailers.
Second.
Okay, moved and seconded. Further discussion? Not. Olson?
Aye.
And
aye.
Merkin? Aye. Motion carries. I would entertain a motion for adjournment.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Hedden?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. We are adjourned.